Recorded live.
Is on me?
Yes, sir.
That's what's up. Well, good evening, brothers. Welcome new callers and old callers. Tonight's topic is, you know, I was talking to Tony about it, and it's, you know, really what this thing is all about. And, you know, what does it mean to be the head of household? So, you know, hopefully we can get some tools or some strategies. But, you know, Tony has given me the opportunity to get this plane off the ground. So hopefully I can get it off the ground and land it towards the end of the evening. You know, and the only rule we have, fellas, is no cursing. And I do want to plug a new feature that we'll add to the end of this call at the conclusion of speaking on everything as it relates to what it means to be the head of household. We have a segment entitled Open Mic, and that's an opportunity for you to share whatever's going on in your marriage, your relationship, or anything with you that you want to share and kind of get some perspective from the group. So again, you know, I want to plug that, you know, after we conclude this segment. We have the open mic segment where you can bring anything to the table, whatever's going on in your personal situation that's not necessarily related to the topic. So with that said, the head of household is virtually impossible to talk about this thing without mentioning how it's rooted in the Bible. And, you know, this is not Bible study. I'm not a pastor, I'm just a regular dude, but, you know, what I won't do is I'll never apologize for the true word of God, and that's where the head of household, you know, originates. So, you know, as I speak, you know, I'll be bobbing and weaving, dipping back and forth in between the biblical and the practical, you know, so y'all bear with me as I read, you know, just one passage of scripture, you know, in the opening here, but I think it's important. Some may have not have heard it before, but, you know, but in any case, the head of household, let's get this thing started. Surprise, surprise, the husband should be the head of household. I think y'all probably already know that. But the head of household should be the provider and the protector of his household. And what that means is that we are responsible for what I call the four L's. The four L's, that's ALS. Emotional, physical, financial, and spiritual well-being of our family. And I'll repeat that again. We're responsible for the emotional, physical, financial, and spiritual well-being of our family. In God's eyes, we are fully and totally responsible for our family. Now, in the society that we live in today, most men don't care about the most important aspect, which is the spiritual aspect of their family. Now, the position of the husband in the home and his related responsibilities is quite clearly defined in principle in Ephesians 5. And I'll read that briefly. It's about spirit-guided relationships. And again, you know, bear with me as I read this passage, but I think each verse is important, starting at verse 21. And further, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. For wives, this means submit to your husbands as to the Lord. For a husband is the head of his wife, as Christ is the head of the church. He is the savior of his body, the church. As the church submits to Christ, so you wives should submit to your husbands in everything. For husbands, this means love your wives just as Christ loved the church. He gave up his life for her to make her holy and clean, washed by the cleansing of God's word. He did this to present her to himself as a glorious church without a spot or wrinkle or any other blemish. Instead, she will be holy and without fault. In the same way, husbands ought to love their wives as they love their own bodies. For a man who loves his wife actually shows love for himself. No one hates his own body but feeds and cares for it, just as Christ cares for the church. And we are members of his body. As the scriptures say, a man leaves his father and mother and is joined to his wife, and the two are united into one. Now, this is a great mystery, but it's an illustration of the way Christ and the church are one. So again, I say, each man must love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her husband. And again, that's Ephesians 5, 21 through 33. Now, don't stop at those verses, fellas, and think that the only responsibility of the husband is to be the head of the house. Head does not mean master, as in master-slave relationship, nor does it mean a relationship like a general to a private in the army. It's more of a partnership where one is the leader, the guide, or the director. But it's the husband who has the last word when it comes to making decisions that will change or have an effect on the marriage. Now, the wife can give her opinion, but in the end, the husband has the last say. In our society, marriage has gotten a lot more complex, but a true head of household recognizes the strengths of his wife and isn't afraid to think of her as his best asset. Now, I want to switch gears really quickly before I shut up and get out of the way here and turn this over to the group. I've got three actual quotes from three wives, three different wives. Wife number one says the following, and this is interesting. I saw my mom be the subservient, quote-unquote, Christian wife to my dad, and I swore to myself I would never, ever get myself roped into that gig. Now, subservient, y'all know I'm big on definitions. Subservient means serving or acting in a subordinate capacity, servile, excessively submissive, or obsequious. Wife number one continues, I wasn't put on this earth to cater to some dude who doesn't even deserve it. I say things should be 50-50. Now, that's wife number one. Wife number two says the following. There's no head of household. It's a joint venture between the couple where no one party has control over the other. It's compromise all the way. That's wife number two. Lastly, wife number three. She says the following. I am the head of my household. If my husband took the reins, we'd be in big trouble. So some guys on this phone, y'all may hear that and say, man, that sounds just like my wife. You know, and I know that essentially, I'm thankfully, you know, my wife won't have to say any of those things, but here's what it boils down to, fellas. If the wife is acting as the head of household, it's not because the wife usurped the authority from the husband, but rather through the abandonment of the husband. And I'll read that again. If the wife is acting as the head of household, it's not because the wife usurped the authority from the husband, but rather through the abandonment of the husband. Now, usurp, what does that term mean? Usurp means to seize another's place, authority, or possession wrongfully. You know, that's the key word. Bottom line, truth of the matter, most couples in modern society don't follow this concept. I mean, let's just be real about it. But here's the tragedy. There were so many couples who didn't get the whole concept in the first place. And as I was talking to Tony a couple weeks back, we talked about how this householdstress.com could essentially be the prerequisite for relationships before people walk down the aisle. You know, just this call alone, just talking about different issues, could be a prerequisite to make sure that people are doing the right thing. But, you know, bottom line, yes, biblically the husband is supposed to be the head of the household, but he's supposed to be the head with love and respect for his wife and his family, not a dictator. That's not what God intended. That's why the vows for both partners said to love, to honor, and to obey. You know, that's all I have to say for now. I just want to get that out there and pitch it out to the group on that topic, on the head of household.
I got a question.
Yes, sir.
And you said the most important part is the spirituality.
Yes.
What if that is your intentions, you know, is to instill the spirituality in the family, but you're getting resistance from your wife? How do you get around that part? Like you're saying, come on, let's go to church. I'm trying to get my family to have a good relationship with the Lord. And then your wife is like,
Yeah, that's a great question, and that happens, you know, a lot of times. But, you know, this gentleman by the name of Sid Galloway has a strategy for head of household. And, you know, people say, well, why is it necessary for me to plan a strategy? Number one, because God commands it, and you know, spiritual relationship, relational goals must be planned and scheduled or they usually won't be achieved. And, you know, we have to have a strategy because you, your spouse, your children desperately need it in order to grow into the full character of Christ. And that's the whole point, you know, with the spiritual aspect of our family. But, you know, you asked the question, how should you do it? You know.
Yeah. Just go.
Yeah.
That's
what I was about to say. Yeah, go ahead.
Let's just think about it. If you're the head, especially as men, women follow your action and not your words a lot of times. So if you don't just go, she won't follow you. She won't see you going every day and seeing you volunteering at the church. And then she'll say, oh, you know, the kids. He's taking my kids to the church. Why am I not doing something? Because everybody will see what you're doing and see how they're left out, and then women will say, oh, I need to step up and go with this person. I need to go with this man because he's doing the right thing. And it's just like in life. I don't think everybody's at the same level, regardless if you're married or not. You may not be at that same place spiritually. And it may just take that other person a little longer.
Yeah, but what you're saying is basically lead by example.
That's right. Lead by example.
Good words.
And I think you have to be diligent and systematic about it, you know, like you said, you know, with that loving authority. And, you know, ultimately you got to pray about it. You know, if your wife is resistant or is just not into it, you know, we remember that we cannot change anybody. You know, only God can change people. Mm-hmm. But we just have to, you know, we just have to be diligent and, you know, just you know, as you say, lead by example.
I think it's a good lesson also, Rodney, to know that these are things that need to be dealt with in the dating process.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
If you're Christian, I mean, the Bible tells you don't get unevenly yoked, and you know, that's referring to a Christian with a non-Christian. And if you know, if you're walking with Christ and this person isn't, that's a, you know, this person says, well, you go, I'll do my thing. You know, that's a red flag right there. So that's why it's important, like, beforehand to check, you know, check this person out. I mean, don't just lead with your quote-unquote emotions.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
We really need to know beforehand what we're getting into. Now, if you find yourself, as a lot of us did, finding Christ after we got married, you know, and let's just say you're a Christian now and your spouse is not, your wife isn't, obviously that's not cause to get a divorce. But it is cause to win her over with true love and understanding. And just because you know, you came to this knowledge at this point doesn't mean that you have a calendar or a timetable to put on her, or vice versa, that, you know, you just need to follow the word and turn over to the Lord, because we don't have the ability to save somebody, but we do have the ability to walk the way that we're called to walk. And for you and your house, you will follow the Lord, but that doesn't mean you can force your wife into doing that, you know. But you do have control over your house and say, well, this is what we're going to do, and sweetie, I'd love for you to come, you know, I'm going to take the kids, you know, and if you want to join us, we'd love to go. But if she doesn't want to, I mean, you're not going to lock her up and drag her.
Yeah, good words.
Hey, this is Alan. I would add on to that as well, just to say that, you know, the head of household also, I mean, if the wife is not going to church, has to remain consistent, you know, with his going and modeling that, because the reality is that if he's going, he's kind of sometimes on, sometimes off. I mean, it just encouraged her, you know, her the more to not, you know, kind of catch on, you know. So he's got to be consistent and kind of, you know, hold out, you know, and keep going and not just be like, oh, well, she's not coming, it's been a year, I'm hanging up my church, you know, my church hat, you know, turning my key. So I think that's important as well.
Yeah, well, if that's really the reason you're going to church, then you probably want to check your own commitment. Because if I had a good friend of mine after I got saved, and he wanted to win his wife back, so he decided to, you know, as he did, you know, try church. And when, you know, when that didn't work, then he, you know, he told me, well, you know, I tried that God thing, that didn't work, so now I need to try something else. And if that's what you're doing, you know, that's not understanding what, you know, what the word's really saying.
Well, I mean, I certainly agree that the motives for you going should be pure. I guess what I'm saying is that obviously you guys living under the same roof, you know, there's a level of influence that the head of household has level of influence that the spouse has. You know what I mean? And sometimes the wife can come and be like, hey, baby, I just want to chill tonight. It's Bible study night. Why don't you take the night off? You know, and I'm just saying that, you know, be consistent, you know, with your modeling. That's all. I mean, I'm saying hopefully the motives are pure, you know, that you're going out of your own personal relationship, but still maintain and not slack off, because having that influence in the house with you where, you know, one is not going, it's like, oh, man, you're going to church again. You know, I mean, every situation, I mean, I've seen situations where, you know, the wife has kind of been, you know, kind of rough, you know, on the brother for going. You know, like, you know, you're wasting your time, you know. And so to still remain consistent even while, you know, the other half, you know, maybe kind of taunting you on or whatever, to give up in the faith.
Good words. Good words. Okay, we have a somebody chat me says, I believe I am head of household based on the many complex decisions that I have to make and the experience that I've had with living with my own, paying bills and providing stability to the household. Am I reading that right? I believe I am head of household based on the many complex decisions I have to make and the experience I've had with living with my own, paying bills and providing stability in the household.
Well, I mean, that can be delegated out, though. I mean, there are situations where you're the head of household that you make sure the lights and stuff is on, but you don't take care of the bills. You provide the money, and the wife can take care of the bills. That doesn't mean if you're not taking care of the bills that you're less than the head of household. So I think that can be adjusted a little bit there.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that, too. And I think, you know, brothers, I mean, sometimes I think we lean towards bill paying as, you know, that's just kind of like the ultimate. And it's really, you know, it's a part of it, but it's not the ultimate.
Well, I can give you an example. You know, have you ever heard your wife say something to the kids like, I put clothes on your back, and you know, like, wait a minute, that's my money. Can't we think we in this situation? But you know, she looked at it as, you know, when she says us.
Yeah.
But at that spare moment, she talks to the kids. She just wants them to, you know, she that tone is totally different. But that is one reason why there's conflict. And marriage, that divorce is where it is. It's because the imbalance of communication about bills. I think we all gone through it.
I think to me that the definition of the head of household is summed up in one word, and that's responsibility. I don't know how many of you guys own your own companies or what, but I own my own company, and the bottom line is I'm responsible. My employees are, you know, they have their jobs, they have this, they have that, but the bottom line is when it comes down to it, I'm the one that is held accountable. And to me, that is what the head of household is. My wife is a wonderful lady, okay? You know, she works diligently at her job. She does all kind of things in the home. She takes care of things. But the bottom line is, I am... What the heck?
Man, somebody got a bad line there.
Oh, okay. I am ultimately responsible. Okay, I'm responsible to make sure that there are funds to pay the bills. I'm responsible for the well-being financially, physically, and spiritually of my family. That doesn't mean that my wife doesn't help, and it doesn't mean that in times she doesn't take the lead in certain things. But the bottom line is I'm held accountable. And Rodney talked about it with his opening statement. Bottom line is I am going to stand before God, And he's going to say, what did you do with the family I entrusted you with? And I can't come up with, well, you know, that woman you gave me. See, that didn't work for Eve, and it's not going to work for us. Okay? I will be held responsible. Well, she didn't want to go to church, so I didn't go. She didn't want to study the word, so we didn't study. She didn't want to, you know, take care of the bills, so I just let them go. She didn't want to fight for the marriage, so I threw in the towel. Okay? We are responsible. Now, we can't help if somebody walks away. If that's what their choice is, hey, they have to do, but we have to do our part. And we're going to be held responsible.
Yeah.
And that might be harsh, but that's truly the way it is. Okay?
Yeah.
My family is my responsibility. All the whole thing. And like I said, my wife is a tremendous helper. Tremendous. Okay? And she's better at some things than I am. You know what? We've agreed for her to handle those things.
Yeah, and another comment we have on here is that, you know, too many times, one guest has chimed in that men leave their wife out of decisions and let them know after the fact. And that's, you know, that's again, you know, again, going back to what I said earlier, is that, you know, yes, you know, the husband, the head of household, you know, has the last say, but, you know, a true head of household, you know, recognizes the strengths of his wife and isn't afraid to think of her as his best asset. So I think, you know, that's a great point that, you know, somebody...
And even guest seven even added on a chat room that, you know, he's the head of his household. However, you know, he wants his wife to be involved in some of the decision-making process. I mean, that's that communication part of it. Well, he still wants that opinion from her, even though it states and it says, as Rodney actually put it, that, you know, the last decision comes to him. However, he wants that wife's opinion, and I think that is good also.
Well, if you don't want your wife's opinion, you don't understand what the head of the household means.
That's right.
Okay? If you think that head of the household means that you run roughshod and your wife doesn't have an opinion, you don't understand. And you're not using, in my opinion, my best asset. My wife has a pulse on things that I don't have a pulse on sometimes.
Yeah, women have better discernment, too.
They do. Mine does. And there's things. I'm like, what are you talking about? She's telling me things. And if you start to understand and trust, and that doesn't mean that's the way, it, you know, we're going to go all the time. But if my wife has, especially if she has a strong feeling about something, I'm going to take a step back and really look at it and really think about it. And for me, if I have to make a decision, first of all, most decisions aren't so much me against her or anything like that, but a lot of times, you know, if she has a strong feeling on something, I've got to take a step back. I've got to look at it, because I know that my wife in the end is going to submit to the word of God and say, honey, you have the final say. And here's what I want to make sure is that I'm getting me out of the way, that I'm hearing the truth from the Lord, and I'm praying and saying, Lord, make sure this is you and not me.
Yeah.
Okay? Because I know that she will follow the path that I choose to go if that's the way it is. Even if she doesn't believe that's the way to go, she'll voice her opinion. I'll listen to that. And if she's that strong, I really got to take a step back and look at this. Okay? And if you don't, I think you're really missing the boat.
Let's get back to the finance piece real quick. I just want to throw something out there. And let's talk about the husband that has to work two jobs, or he's got to work 12-hour days, holidays, and weekends. And he is bringing the money, and he's fulfilling that piece of it. But then he's missing the homework. He's missing the softball games. He's missing the ballet practice. He's missing the... You know, the
Wait
date
a minute,
night.
Is he in ballet? Is that what you're saying?
Well, you know, I'm talking about, you got girls, kids
I'm
that are in ballet.
I'm just messing.
Yeah. So, and you know, and he's missing these family things, these special moments that you can never get back. But he's the head of household. He's bringing that money in. You know, I mean, can we put that in the same category?
Yeah, and I think that's a great point, Tony, because it's all about quality of life, and you know, if you, you know, say you have a job where you work those 60-hour weeks, but you do miss all the events, you know, what's more important? Is the money more important, or the time where, you know, your daughter's, you know, hoping that you'll get off of work or be available to attend her ballet recital? I mean, when it comes down to it, you know, you have to sort of, you know, weigh that out. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, we struggle with that, you know, trying to, you know, chase the dollar and make sure the bank account's full and the bills are paid and the college funds are, you know, started and saving for that and, you know, other things. But, you know, we miss out on the little things, you know, that first bike ride, you know, whatever. So I think it goes back to, you know, what, in the grand scheme of things, what's more important, stacking the bank account or, you know, those little things that, you know, you cannot, I mean, once you miss them, I mean, they're gone. You know, you're not going to see that first time, you know, your son or daughter can ride a bike. I mean.
Yeah, you're right. And not only that.
The key word there is balance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because the guy that's there for every minute probably isn't covering his financial responsibilities.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think the key word is balance. If you're always at work instead of being there, there's a problem. If you're always there instead of taking care of your financial responsibilities, there's going to be a problem. If you're always up in church instead of ministering to your family, you've got things twisted because your first ministry is your family. So I think the key word there is balance. And if you don't have a balance and either you or your wife think it's out of balance, you may want to seek some help to you know, to say, okay, let's look at this from an objective point of view. Because sometimes wives don't understand the pressures that we are under.
Yeah, and that's good that you speak to balance because essentially – you know, you also had the situation where the man is at home, but he's still working. So he's not engaged. You know, oh, yeah, you're riding the bike, honey, okay. And he's on the laptop, on the BlackBerry.
And,
so,
and that's where it comes to balance. You need to learn to shut it off sometime.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Yeah, because, you know, what ultimately ends up happening is then the wife is taking on the roles of the head of household. And that's when you get the conflict. Like when you spoke in the beginning, you know, the wife believes that she's the head of household. You know, just because we're bringing home the money, that's what we're supposed to do. But there's also a certain amount of time that's got to be implemented as well. And when you're gone out there chasing the dollar, and then you have to get, because we also need entertainment too. So maybe we want to stop off and at the bar or whatever the case may be after work just to unwind or whatever the case. But then the wife is taking care of the grocery shopping, the homework, the kids' activities, just the planning of the household. And then we walk in at the 11th hour and talk about, well, I'm the head of household. And that's where the conflict comes in. You know what I mean? So I think that we have to do a little bit more than that, that we have to stand up and say, okay, you know, I'm going to get that balance that Andrew's talking about so we can get that out of their mind. You can't have your wife talking about she's the head of the household because that's a problem. That's going to be a respect issue in your household.
Exactly.
I would throw this out too that, you know, definitely, I mean, I agree with the balance piece, but I also think as the head of household, a man, you know, may need to have that talk with his partner about, you know, realistic expectations of where their finances are. I mean, because the reality is that, you know, if you overextend yourself, you can be working 3, 4, 5 times. I mean, seriously, I mean, when you talk about expectations, I mean, how the head of household needs to, you know, need to man up and say, look, maybe, you know, we can't buy the $300,000. We, you know, we need to stay, you know, at 250 so that, you know, I can be home. Because if not, I mean, you know, he's not going to be home.
Yeah.
You know, depending, everybody's financial situation is different, but I think there needs to be some real expectations there to say, hey, you know what, if we go out this far, you know, because then the pressure for the head of household is, well, I got to bring home the bacon because I am the head of household. So, you know, the balance there, I mean, it's going to always tip to one side.
Yeah, that's good words because, you know, like you said, if you, you know, your wife wants that huge, beautiful home, I mean, you got to have that sit down with her to say, you know, well, in order for us to afford this, I'm not going to be home. So do you want this big, huge, beautiful home and me not home or something more moderate and me at home more?
Right, and that's where it has to be you have to take, you know, the bottom line and say, okay, but we, you know, hey, yeah, I know you want that, you know, big home, or I know you want that trip, but we can't do this right now. Okay. But we'll plan in the future to do it, and we'll put this, you know, in our budgetary plans that we can do this. But if we do this now, we'll be overextended, and that'll take away, and down the road, you know, I won't be able to be here because I'll have to take a second job and work 60, 70, 80 hours a week.
Yeah, and I think the important thing, too, to mention is that, and this is really key, is that literally I've learned that it's better put on paper than actually articulating it or verbalizing it, because a lot of times what I found, you know, with my wife, if I say that, you know, we really can't do that this month, honey, or we really got to wait till next year or next month or whatever, she has no idea, you know, since she doesn't, you know, handle the money or know what's going on. But when I put it on paper and I show it to her, then she gets some more, it's like a reality check. But if I just tell her, she doesn't receive it, you know, until I actually show, okay, this is what we got, this is how much this costs, you know, this is what we need to do to save for it. And then she can sort of get a more realistic approach to, you know, meeting that goal rather than saying, you know, well, why couldn't we do it last month, you know, whatever. So
now,
it's good to put it on paper.
Hey, Rodney, let me throw something in there on this real quick. I just want to let you know, I'm fortunate enough, my wife is a stay-at-home mom, and I support the entire household. And every once in a while, we both get on our high horse and say, oh, I want this, and I need that, and we need, like, a new truck, and need a new house, and need a new roof, or whatever it is. And I'll look at her and say, look, it can't happen now, but if you really want this, then you need to go help me get a job. You need to go get a job and help me do this. And then it turns around, because sometimes she gets in her wants as well, and she'll get on a little high horse and say, why can't we go on that vacation? Everybody else goes on a cruise. Why can't we do that? And I was like, well, you know, things happen, and I'm only so much unless you want to kill me and, you know, make me go do those three or four jobs. You know, and I put it back on her. I said, look, I said, you know, if that's something's real important to you, then you need to jump in here and help me with this. And she usually understands pretty quickly on that deal.
Good words.
Good words. Great words, actually.
The responsibility with both of us. We're both in this game together. We're both responsible what happens to the house. And you guys were also talking earlier about, you know, letting your wife know stuff or getting her opinion on things. I think if it's a routine decision, as men, we should go ahead and just make it. On the stuff that I waver about or not sure about, absolutely, 110%, go get your wife's opinion. Otherwise, make the decision and move on. My wife makes a decision without me in some cases, even when it comes to money. We have a fund that we set aside. It's a giving fund. And sometimes she runs into people, and more so than I do, because I'm just at work all day, but she socializes and networks and stuff. She'll run into somebody who's really got a hard down-and-out issue. She'll cut them a check right there and won't really talk to me, but we both have already agreed. We know where that money's coming from. She knows what the balance is. She's made a decision on her own to write a check or do whatever and get that money to that person or that fund or whatever it is that she feels led to. She'll turn around, she'll tell me about it, and as her husband, I will support her 100% because we've already agreed this is what it's there for, and she has carte blanche in dealing with that kind of stuff. And that's the way we even do our budget. We both can look at the budget, not hiding anything from her, And she has carte blanche in spending it. Now, she knows when the money is gone, she has to stop. And we've had those conversations in the past, too. Look, you know, my bucket's only so big, and that's all it's going to hold. And if you're going to fuss about it, then it's time for you to go get a job and make the bucket a little bigger.
Good word.
Yeah.
Good word. Yeah, but that's the conversation. But they have the understanding. He's not like it's my way or the highway. They have an understanding, and that's what it's about.
And I think that relationship works a lot easier because of the fact that, you know, you do give her some type of responsibility to say, hey, you know what I mean, you know, you some of this belongs to you, and, you know, you can make some decisions. I mean, as a decision maker, I think it's easier to come to the table when they are a decision maker as opposed to this is how it is and, you know, sign off on it.
I'll tell you one thing that don't work is the which mine is mine and which yours is mine stuff. Work at all.
No. But what about the independent wife? The independent wife that goes to work too, and she makes a very nice income, and she says, well, you're not going to tell me. And I know, understand that you're the head of household and everything, but, you know, I make this amount of money myself, so I'm going to go out and do what I need to do. And on the flip side of the coin, once the debt gets built up and you have to pay it back anyway because you're the head of the household, and then you're just working 12, 13 hours a day just to achieve that goal. So you're out of the house trying to fix something that she started because she's got her own money. What do we do about the independent wife?
Well, I think that comes back to the same exact thing that that Rodney talked about in the beginning, and setting the parameters of the marriage. And if you have those set before you go into the marriage, you don't run into these problems as often. But if you go in and that's the, you know, let's just say you start to go into the marriage process, and through, you know, marriage class or counseling, you find out this is the way it is, and you still decide to move into that, I mean, you got a lot to deal with. And if you find yourself in that situation and didn't understand that going in, I think that can be really difficult, because there are people out there, just like you said, hey, you know, this is your money, this is my money, I do what I want with my money, not understanding what the word marriage really means. And that can be another situation where you truly, truly are going to most likely need to seek some outside help and counsel, because that's probably going to lead you to not being together. Somebody with that kind of attitude, if you don't get help, whether it be a husband or a wife, you're probably going to end up at a point where one of you isn't going to put up with that any longer.
Yeah, and just to expound on that, regarding the quote-unquote independent woman that works, you know, my wife works, and but, you know, it's so funny because, you know, we have a $25 rule, and that's if either one of us wants to spend over $25, you have to give a courtesy call. And it's really a formality, but, you know, it's and 99% of the time, you know, the other person is like, yeah, whatever, go ahead and do it. But it's just like a more of a courtesy. And that's worked, because in the past, you know, since I did handle the money, and I was, you know, handling, you know, everything, so I was like, well, I'm going to go, you know, do this and do that. And then, you know, when she would come and say, yeah, I need some new chapstick, and I would respond, what do you need chapstick for? You know, I would literally go off, you know, but I just spent, you know, hundreds of dollars on some frivolous stuff, some DVDs or something. And then when she comes and say, you know, well, I'm working, I would like to have a few dollars, I need some new makeup. You know, I say, you don't need no new makeup. You know, so, I mean, it's all about communication, and, you know, you have to come to an agreement as far as, you know, how it's going to work, you know, as far as the financial aspect. And it all boils down to communication. Whatever works.
You're a hard man, boy.
Hey, I'm not harder than my man that was just speaking, but, you know, and you know what I'm talking about. But, you know, it's more of a, you know, like I say, it's not anything where now, you know, it's gotten better. But the financial thing is, we've been on a financial roller coaster over our 10 years of marriage, because originally, you know, we had one bank account, you know, and everything went through that. And if my wife needed, you know, $5 or wanted to spend some money, she had to go through me. And, of course, y'all fellas know that didn't work for too long. So, essentially, you know, I ended up, you know, switching, you know, we had separate accounts, you know, where she would have her, you know, her direct deposit would go into her account, and I had my account, and she would kick me back, you know, her half of the bills or whatever, and then she would keep her little money for her makeup and chapstick or whatever she needed. And, you know, but essentially, she that didn't work for her. You know, then she had to balance a checkbook, and she's like, I don't know, I don't want to do this anymore. So now we're back to square one, where everything goes through me. And, you know, so it's interesting how things, you know, come all the way back around full circle, because, you know, she's just now comfortable to just, you know, just call me or whatever, say I'm spending this or I'm doing that, and, you know, I handle everything, you know, on my end, and I kind of have an idea where everything is when everything is coming in or, you know, going out. So, you know, she just rather just, you know, call me or not call me and spend with, you know, get what she needs. So,
Anybody else want to reflect on those issues in the household? I will comment, Rodney, that sounds a little complex, what you got going on over there. A little complex. You know what I mean? It's, you know, but I mean,
how does that
it's
help?
A system. Go ahead.
Can we move on to head of household and kid and children, discipline the kids, raising the kids. Sometimes.
Well, go ahead.
Sometimes with you have a complex when it's a male or female. I mean, your son is getting in trouble. Is that the man's responsibility? I mean, is it both his responsibility? Is the man and female, should he treat each one the same?
The head of household should be active in the area of discipline and the raising of the children, of course. And, you know, as it goes back to what I said earlier, the discipline should be with love. You know, many times discipline is administered without love. And, you know, Ephesians 6:4, fathers, provoke not your children to wrath. And again, it talks about it in Colossians 3:21, fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged. Now, the head of household, therefore, does not leave all the discipline up to his wife, but shares in the molding and direction of the children. And it's not a proper division of responsibility to say that as the husband, I will provide the living, and the wife is to take care of the house and the children. And the husband has duties even after his day's work is done. I mean, I'm washing clothes right now, and I've been to work today, you know, but had to be done. My wife was not home, so, but, you know, the head of household should have a hand in everything. That's what I believe.
Okay. Hey, we got a lot of people on the call. Does anybody have anything they want to share in reference to what they feel as though the head of household's responsibilities should be and how their wife plays a role in their particular household?
Yeah, because we got a lot of callers on the phone. You know, please
person?
Yeah, don't let us dominate the conversation, fellas. You know, this is really right. Y'all's call.
Yeah, for sure. Not one person, even with the kids, discipline the kids. That's a big one, isn't it? Who disciplines the kids?
That is a big one.
You know what I'm saying? Back in the day when I was growing up, I had to, wait till your father gets home. That was my thing. You know what I mean? I had to wait for my father to get home to get the discipline. You know, is that the same way in households now?
No, it's the ones where you want to go out and you be like, well, you have to wait till your dad or you have to ask your dad. Because I remember trying to get over, you know, you go to one parent and say, well, mom said if I ask you, you say, yeah, I'm good. And then I'll go to the next person. When he says no, I say, yeah, dad said, all right, can I go? She said, all right. I'm out the door before the argument starts.
Yeah.
Now, I will ask the question because a friend of mine was actually dealing with this not so long ago, where he had said he had made a statement in reference to something that the child could do, and I think it was his daughter, something that he didn't agree upon, and the wife kind of overruled him and said, well, no, you go ahead and do that, I'll deal with daddy. You know what I'm saying? Because sometimes we get a little overreactive as men and we, you know, get overprotective or whatever, especially for our teenage daughters. But this particular case, the wife overruled the dad, you know, and that could be major in the household. Has anybody had any experience with that?
I mean, honestly, I would have to agree. I mean, for any marriage or anything to work, it has to be a common ground between the two, the mother and the father. I don't think that necessarily the father has to be the complete disciplinary. I think it has to be, you know, a joint venture. That way you keep that respect level, you know what I mean, throughout. I know growing up, you know, I was raised by my mom, you know, but I knew that if I got in trouble, then she would call dad. Well, now, you know, I am the dad, so, you know, mom can throw that bone, but, you know, she's, you know, the kids know that, you know, if mama says no, then 9 times out of 10, daddy says no too. So,
yeah, that's good. That's great.
If your kids are playing one against the other, which is a game that I think every kid tries at one point, that has to be nipped in the bud.
Right.
You I remember as a kid playing that one time, and I played it one time. Okay. You know, as far as in our house, I have a different situation where I raised my my kids and then went through a divorce and got remarried and had an 11-year-old become my daughter at 11 years old. Well, I guess she came into my life at 11, and then we got married when she was 13. That's a fun age to step into a little girl's life. But the discipline doesn't change. Discipline simply means to teach, and there's lots of ways to teach, but you have to have two things to be able to discipline a child. Number one is love, and number two is respect. If the love isn't understood by the child, you'll never teach them. Well, you may get them to do what you ask them to do, but you're never going to reach them. Okay, and when they get out of your presence or out of your house, it's going to be a different ball game. So when you understand that discipline is just teaching your children, people really don't care how much you know until they know how much you care, and you're not going to reach that child until they understand that you're there because you love them and you're trying to help them. On the same fact, if there's no respect, and I've seen it so many times where a quote-unquote independent or strong woman and a weak man where she's just totally disrespecting him, and the kids are going to disrespect him, you know. And I've seen it the other way also where, you know, women are being disrespected by their husbands, and that's a total breakdown in the family when that kind of thing happens. And again, like I said, that's something that has to be taught. And unfortunately, we as men, a lot of us don't know how to do it because we've never been taught. And you know, the funny thing is that we take more time and effort to learn how to drive a car than we do on learning how to be married and raising kids. And we go out there and we wing it. And then we turn around and have, you know, bumped up kids and falling apart families because we don't take the time to get on calls like this, to seek counseling, to seek, you know, instruction or classes to learn how to do these things. They don't just come on us when we get to be a certain age. We have to seek the information from those who already understand it. I mean, what amazes me more than anything, and like I said, I'm a business owner, I listen to some of my friends, and some of them are quite broke, and they listen to broke people for financial advice. I mean, that's dumb as dirt. Okay, you know, they'll have somebody with some expertise in an area, and they won't even ask them for it. They'll go out and ask somebody that doesn't have a clue, and you just shake your head. And if you want to have a successful marriage, you want to find people that do, and get a mentor. Whether it be in your family or outside your family or in your church or wherever you have, you know, you can see a relationship that's working, find out what they know and mentor, you know, ask that person to help you. Most people that are successful in life have no problem helping somebody because somebody helped them.
Yep.
So basically, if you're the head of household, don't go ask the a single man advice on your marriage, pretty much.
Yeah, well, it's like asking somebody that doesn't have kids, how do you raise kids?
Well, I don't. This is D. What's up?
My phone was charging, but okay. I think when one is seeking advice from others, I'm saying you have to be real careful on, I guess, whether or not you disclose that information. Because like I said, I'm old school, and because I'm old school, with you know, it's like what stays in this house, what happens in this house stays in this house. But if you're gonna go out and you're going to speak to others, make sure that that information or that the other people don't indirectly or directly bring that back into the house. Because the next thing you know, you could, you know, I've seen it happen in churches where everyone knows the business. You know, they all went to this person, this person, this person. Next thing you know, you got issues and problems. And there's nothing wrong with mentoring, but what happens is that sometimes whoever that person is giving the mentor advice, all of a sudden is, I guess, the doctor. And what happens is that they may spread that information. That, I, you know, personally with me, it hasn't happened, but I know it's happened with other people. So the thing we have to look at is when you're seeking advice, you know, make sure that whatever advice they're giving you, they're also preaching that they're doing it at home. Because they can tell you one thing and they can be doing the other.
Good words. Good words. Yeah, because we're all married men and we're on this call. And some of us may be seeking advice. Some of us may not be seeking advice. But the good thing is that we all have one thing in common. We all want to get better or we wouldn't be on this call. You know, so I definitely understand what you're talking about.
Am I? Can I be heard?
Yes.
Please be heard.
I didn't know. I was loud. I was on. And I dialed the number. It's my first time ever calling this thing. This, you know, as far as training your children or working with your wife or, you know, or getting advice, training my children, as far as the breakdown that happens when people get older, it does bother me when I watch, I tell a story about a lady that walked in to me and my wife in a store some years ago, and she asked me, how would I feel if my children were to kick my mother, this is a real story, by the way, kick my mother to the point that she falls and then continue to kick her. So why would you say that? She said, because my grandchildren, she pointed to them, did that to me. And I thought, that would never happen. Because in my household, my children, many, many things have to happen before you build up to that. One of the things that I see happening throughout these situations where children are totally disrespecting their parents is the parent doesn't understand parenting. When the small things happen, they grow to bigger things if you don't, as I put it now, with nip it in the bud, as I'm doing with my daughter with the school situation right now, when they're small. So that when the respect that is needed for them to hear you is made clear when they're very young and as they're growing up. It is harder when they're already been raised by some other people. And I applaud anyone that's able to do it. The challenge that we have with the spouses, a lot of times, you know, when we talk about being equally yoked, we don't really know what that is. And the issue is, how do we make that happen in a grown, you can raise your child from a baby up. How do you, you have a spouse that's grown and has his or her own ways. How do you evenly yoke that situation? It takes a lot of work and a lot of communication, a lot of love, a lot of giving, I believe, and taking on both sides. And we have to be willing to do all of that. It's a tough scenario to work with. But I've been complaining about different things, but all in all, I've been married with my wife for 20 years. I've been with my wife for 20 years, been married for 19, and this is my second marriage. I've learned the joy of being faithful. My father taught me the opposite, okay, and I carried that in my first marriage. My present marriage, I feel very happy to state that I've never cheated on my wife, and I'm very, and it feels good every day.
Wow.
Literally every day. I know the difference. I know the difference of a good marriage and bad. I can see the before and after. Okay. Now,
and those are good words.
Thank you.
Because for some of us it's an achievement to be faithful. Some of us it's almost like a graduation to faithfulness, because from
yes.
what we've seen and from what you're talking about, our fathers have
yeah.
showed us the total opposite.
Right.
You know what I mean, so when we get in a marriage, we try to mirror them And then we realized, just like Andrew said last week, his wife was his wife was married, but he wasn't. You know what I mean? And that's what we've been taught, and society tells us, okay, you know, if you can get away with it, get away with it. You know,
yeah.
But to flip the coin and to say, well, now I'm going to try the unthinkable and to be a faithful husband and be successful at it, that's an achievement, in my standards anyway.
I say this quite often. For years, I didn't understand that because I told you I was married before, and I was like my dad. My dad is now with his girlfriend he's had ever since he first got married to his fourth wife. Did you catch that?
Wow.
It was meant to be.
Okay.
Understood.
Wow.
So,
you might want to repeat that. I don't think all the brothers got that.
My dad is now. My dad is now still with the girlfriend he had from when he first got married to his fourth wife.
Wow.
Wow. I get it, though, but wow.
Wow. They get it now.
Talk about patience. Talk about patience.
Yeah.
If all women were that patient.
Wow. So like were you still talking on topic or you finished?
No, we still talking about topic. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I guess the funny thing with me is that, you know, my mom and dad, you know, they've been married, I guess, maybe 30 plus years, and, you know, it wasn't always the best. But then, you know, my grandfather, I only met him twice in my life. The first time I met him, he was drunk. The second time was after a stroke. But, you know, my dad would never talk about him. And then, you know, when I got to talk with my family, it was like, oh, yeah, he was married to your grandma, which is the one in Alabama, for, you know, a brief stitch. And then next thing I know, he was gone. So, you know, he had 20 kids that we know of. He was married twice. And there's six different baby mamas. Then, in my mind, it was like, well, you know what? I don't really think he really had a stable relationship. So when you look at from the time that I was a child to the time that I started dating, and my, you know, and maybe we always say the William P. gene. And the William P. gene was like, if you pissed us off, we was gone. And that's kind of like what I was like in the early stages of, you know, of dating. And, you know, I've been engaged twice, and they both were called off because it got to the point that I said, you know what, I can't do this. And I had no problem doing that. But, you know, from that second engagement to my final engagement with my wife, there was a 10-year, it may have been 10 years, about 10 years before I really said, you know what, I think this is something that I really want to do, and I don't want to be cursed with that William P. gene. And I was lucky, didn't have any kids, you know, because, you know, people always look, hey, you got no kids? Your granddaddy had 20, you know. I said, no, I got one. And, you know, but, you know, I would always hear that when I would go visit the relatives, you got no kids yet, you know, because they, for some reason, they thought I had that William P. gene. And, you know, unfortunately, I don't, but to make a long story short, mainly what I'm trying to get at is that, you know, although I love my granddaddy and never met him, you don't always have to be cursed with his bad habits or with her bad habits or whatever, you know, wherever you get your habits. You can always, and you can change that.
Yeah.
You know, you can kind of dictate your own future and how you want things to be laid out. And, you know, I'm fortunate for me, I had a lot of good role models. You know, male role models who kind of nurtured me and got me along the way and said, you shouldn't do this and shouldn't do that. But, you know, for my mom to stay in it as long as she did with all this, you know, the stupid stuff that my dad did, it's a testament to her. And why she's still my girl. Not my main girl. My main girl is my wife. But, you know, she's still my girl.
I got a question to add for you guys that have not had good role models, i.e. a dad in the home to lead or what. What would you suggest and what would you say to someone to, you know, to get that type of information? How would you get that?
HouseholdStress.com.
Good question.
Say it again?
HouseholdStress.com.
Was that you, Rodney?
householdstress.com. Yeah, that's me. Yeah. I mean, really, because I mean, and I'm serious, Andrew, because you know, a lot of times we don't get the, you know, we may get a perspective, but it's not the right perspective. You know, if I guess you can understand what I'm saying is that, you know, this call is so beautiful because we, I mean, we get some real understanding and some real wisdom on this call. And, you know, I can go across the street. I can go anywhere to get, you know, somebody's opinion on something, but is that the right opinion? And I think, you know, this is the forum where you get some real, you know, you get challenged and, you know, it challenges your thinking and your behavior. And I think that's what we want, you know, when we don't, you know, have those good role models. And, you know, that's what I think. Householdstress.com.
I mean, for me personally, like I said, I was raised by a single mom, but my dad was, you know, around. But, you know, I saw my dad, you know, just like anyone else, do dirt. You know, he was married or what have you, but he still had extramarital affairs. I saw my uncles and all my cousins who were married. They did that. Now, me growing up, you know, I didn't want that. So now I have a son, and, you know, as the head of the household, I don't want my son to see what I went through, you know, to see what I saw and think, okay, well, that's okay, you know. But I saw exactly what it did to my mom and how it affected her and her relationship to our men. So I won't let my son nor my daughter see that and go through that. And to me, that's what the head of household should do, you know. I mean, being faithful to your wife is, yeah, that's good between you two, but it goes higher than that. You know, I mean, once you make those vows, you made those vows to her as well as to God. So once you step out of that, then I think, you know, you ruined it overall.
Your words.
One thing I'm looking at with my children is I have girls, 10 and 12 year old girl, and we're reading the Bible for this year, trying to get through it for the first time for the year. And as I think about that evenly yoked thing, as we go through the Bible, it's an amazing thing. You think you know your children, you think you're teaching them, you think you're doing great stuff. When you go through that Bible, it brings up life. It brings up life. You have to, so in the first chapter of Matthew, the first chapters of Matthew is where it talks about Joseph, cutting off the relationship between him and Mary. I had to teach them why, and what sex is, and what the issue is, was if because if he wasn't with her, somebody was. You know? Okay. I mean, okay. So it's like, you know, you want me to marry you? Okay, you know. You know, back then, when you were betrothed to somebody, you may as well, you're already married. You know, so it wasn't like now, nowhere near like now, where, you know, getting married, I don't need a man, all that kind of stuff. So I'm teaching them basically this, that it is a shameful situation to be in that situation. And I'm using the Bible, I guess, God is using me with that is his instrument to teach my children about life.
Yeah.
Now I'm thinking of that. This is not anything like I got when I was a kid.
Right. Yeah, me neither. And I think that's a great segue.
I don't know when you joined the call, but one of the early callers was saying, as the head of a household, when you feel it's your charge, but your wife doesn't back you in, let's say, leading spiritually. Have you run into any of that?
That is a major issue. That is a major issue. That when with these Bible readings, I want my wife to be with us. We have a pretty good time, actually, with these readings. She feels that she has too much on her plate. She can't do it. She's doing the Bible study at the church. She's doing the some other kind of call with the church. and she feels like that's more than enough. So doing this with the family is not something she can see doing. I have issues with that, but what do I do? You know, we have the point I'm making with that is with her is we are the first thing you take care of is family, your family, blood family. Then you go to the next stages beyond that. With our children, understanding where their heads are with these different areas, it's a major, major issue. You may or may not know these people in this church, but we'll probably know these children until we pass.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I go back to my earlier comment that, you know, I think you should refer to that other outlet, which we have on Thursday nights for the women, where it's, you know, we have a wonderful moderator, and she does the same thing that we do here on Tuesday night with just women with the same topic. So that may be another outlet. But I think this is a perfect segue to, you know, what I spoke about earlier is the most important aspect of being the head of household is the spiritual well-being of our families. And, you know, a lot of times we, you know, think financial and physical, you know, and physical is important too, but the spiritual aspect is the most important because, you know, as we know, for we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in places. And that's, you know, that's where the rubber meets the road, you know, as far as, you know, what are we doing for our families? You know, are we being, you know, are we leading by example? And, you know, the Christian father should set an example for his family, of course, as he earns a living, directs the household, you know, as he fulfills his role as the head of the house. But he should see to their spiritual development by the life he lives and the direction in which he leads his family. So, you know, and that starts with, you know, and that start goes back to love, you know, and the love for our family. We should want, you know, their spiritual well-being to be, you know, to be in the right place, you know, when it comes down to it.
Anybody else want to reflect on that? Anybody else not get a chance to speak this evening?
Yeah, please do. I'm getting hoarse.
You can want it all you want to. I agree with you.
Well, can I throw another one in there?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think someone was getting ready to say something.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Let me hush.
No, I'm just listening. This is Simon. I'm just listening. And I usually do a lot more talking, but I'm just listening. So I think that's really important, trying to learn to listen. But one of the things that I just keep going back on my mind, I think that everybody on this call, you know, their genuine feeling is they want to do the right thing for their family. They, you know, if you're out, you know, messing around or anything like that, you know, you're not doing it with the idea or with the intentions of hurting your family, although we're smart enough, we're intelligent enough to know that there are repercussions and it's probably going to bother. I'm just thinking that, you know, I know that I was shown the right things to do. You know, I was able to see both sides. I didn't have a father in the house, but I had a grandfather that my grandfather and my grandmother was married over 60 years. But I got an uncle that's younger than my mother. My mother is the baby with my grandmother and my grandfather, but there's an uncle that's younger than my mother. So, you know, there was infidelity in there. But I knew that getting married or being married, you're supposed to be faithful. But the thing that keep coming to my mind is no matter how much we give that example and we do the right thing and we stay spiritually grounded, that our children, once they get out in the world, or once we have to let them go, college, moving out the house, whatever it is, they're going to run into some people. And it might even be that the person they run into, it might be the woman they choose to be their wife that just wasn't brought up that way, that she seen that it was okay for her to be loose, you know, or whatever. And the only thing that you could do is what I keep coming back with, everything that we say to do, the phone calls, leading by example, the only thing that keep coming back in my mind is the only thing you could truly do, if anything, is pray and teach your children to pray, to meditate. And when you run into that problem, daddy might not always have the answer. Mama might not always have the answer. You're not always going to get the answer on head of household phone call. You're going to have to sometimes, you got to go into your closet and you got to the ultimate answer is going to come from God. So that's just what I keep. That's what I keep getting back to. I'm listening, and but it ain't no right answer. The only right answer is what between you and the Lord.
That's what's up.
Yeah, but you know what? And those are good words. And let me just interject real quick. But what we are responsible for, as fathers, as head of household, is to provide the foundation for our children. Because the foundation gives them an escape. When it all goes to hell and everything's going wrong and they don't know what to do, they've lost control, they've lost grip, we provide that foundation for them to say, well, wait a minute, there's one thing that I can do, and that's pray. There's one place I can go back to is that Bible that my father always talked about. Go back to that story in Matthew that my father talked about. You know what I mean? We have to give them, because our kids,
exactly,
they love their father. Trust me.
Mm-hmm.
They love their moms, but they love their father, especially if the father's in their life. And they want to they want to go back and say, this is what my daddy told me back in the day. Let me go back to that. You've got to have that foundation. If you don't have it, then they're going to be lost, and they'll stay lost. They'll have nothing to come
right
back to.
That's true. That's the prodigal son. He came back. Went out. That's exactly what that is. Everybody knows the story.
But that's what excites me about the reading with my children and studying and expounding on these things with my children. That's something that I never had, and most people never have. I went to Sunday school talking about that, and the fact that most of us are in here trying to learn this, probably never get dealt with it at all when we were children. So we're starting to learn it now in our 40s and 50s and more. But if you have that as a foundation, as I just heard a minute ago, and that was my point, if you have that as your foundation, you have something to back you to figure out, okay, where do I stand?
Mm-hmm.
I heard some years ago, if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. Well,
mm-hmm,
giving you a stance, a foundation of where you need to be, is a phenomenal place to be. And as my children's father, I think it's my job to give them the best I can give them. And the Bible, I heard it was called the basic instructions before leaving Earth. The Bible is life. So if I can give them experience of life before they had to experience it themselves, they then have wisdom. What more can you need when you get away from home?
Because it's like you're there with them.
Mm-hmm.
Wisdom.
It's like you're looking over your shoulder.
I tell you, it's good to hear all you gentlemen sharing this. I think a while back when I threw out this topic as potentially being addressed, I think I was the main one that really wanted to get on the call and hear what would be said, because coming from a divorced home where my mother was the head of household, you know, that whole concept of having a male to really model the way, that didn't exist. That
right,
just wasn't there. The males that modeled the way for me were a lot of coaches, my mother's brothers, you know, and they were positive. They were all positive, but it wasn't the things that really allowed me to focus in on how things would look in my house, because, like I said, you know, growing up with just my mother, essentially, you know, it was fine and dandy what they were teaching me, you know, in the driveways or in the backyards at the picnics and barbecues. It was fine and dandy what I was learning on the courts or on the playing field. But when I went back to my home, the head of household was my mother.
Right.
So, you know, to hear you all sharing these different things surrounding, you know, spirituality, religion, Christianity, faith, and really just, in a sense, just being able to apply everything that has been presented for us, it's meaningful. It's powerful to me. Because what I've been thinking about, you know, this question of what does it mean to be head of household, you know, I really didn't have an answer. I just think it's ever evolving. I think that you have to be able to adapt. I think there are things that you, you know, take from conversations from those people that have impacted your life, whether it's a professor in college, whether it's an elementary school teacher, whether it's a minister, and you place it all together, and it gives you things that allow you to make the right choice for a situation. Like I said before a while back, you know, my biggest battle is choice. And I think as head of household,
you know, the great thing about being able to continue to adapt and define this is that you can make the very best choice possible and be equipped with the resources to do that. And listening to you all share this stuff this evening, it's pretty powerful for me in the short amount of time that I have been on the call, because this is one of those situations where I honestly don't have much to add, because I don't know, you know. But it is really good to hear you all talking about your children, to hear you talking about your wives, talking about the development that you all are taking in this, because, you know, I, for the longest time, I like to really think that I pride myself on knowing an answer or knowing where to go and get one. And I can honestly say with this topic, I didn't have a clue. I really did not have a clue, because I am not really that versed in the word, and, you know, I'm just starting to really get a grasp on how relevant it is to the direction that I'm taking, and where I'd like to take my household and my wife and my child. But, you know,
that's the first step, brother.
It's just great to be on the call, and I think to be able to equip myself, like I said, with the resources to begin to tackle this, because, you know, I don't know all the answers. You know, I'm not an island, you know.
But you know what? I think that you. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I think you said something that just using what the choice. I think that's something that I mean, that's just a jewel that you just gave me, because, and if you want to call it, I just had an epiphany or whatever. It's just, I think that's something that I probably would want to do now with my son and with my daughter, is concentrate on the notion of choice. You know, not just saying, okay, this is how things are. This is how things are supposed to be. This is how you handle this situation. I think that it's really, really important to talk to them about the choice, the alternative, because this is one way this can go, and this is the other way it can go, based on experience. Because, again, I'm saying this because I had my thoughts growing up. I had my way of growing up. This is the way my mother always said it would be. This is how my uncle said. This is how my brother. This is what I always seen. And then I got into college, and boom, it was like all these other people that was like, man, I don't know what you're talking about. This is how it is. Or not saying it verbally, but this is how they were carrying it. This is how it is where I'm from. You know, this is the right thing for me. This is how life is, and that was their choice. I think it's really important to concentrate on choice, to make them aware that you want to have these choices in life. It's not gonna always be like the way I said it. You're gonna have to decide on which way you want to go, and once you choose your position, you stick to that position. I don't know if that means that carries anything with anybody, but
here's a lot.
I got to tell you, not until I'm only 36. I'll be 36 next month, and not until I was 30 that I said to myself that, you know, I in my mind I said, you know, this is how I am. This is the direction. I mean, about a number of things, but this is the direction I'm going to go. Can't nobody change how I am about this. This is Simon. This is how Simon is about certain things. And so people are going to come to your kids, they're going to come to me and say, nah, this ain't the way you want to do it, but I've already decided, no, this is it. This is my choice. Does anybody get what I'm saying? I know it's kind of...
You may
like
have that. Gotten that through a lot of trial and error in your life. I mean, you had to have gotten it through a lot of trial and error in your life. And all of us do. All of us do. We have to, we try things. You know, okay, well, we try. You know, first I try to be like my dad. Well, that didn't work out too well for me. He's on his however many women now. It didn't work out so well for me. I didn't have a biblical base. When I'm looking at, you know, I heard a saying some years ago that experience, you know, you can experience something a lot of times and still be just as dumb as you were in the first place. Okay. or you could, or you could, or,
on your foundation. You got that right.
Love experienced people.
Yeah.
Okay. But wisdom comes from extracting from that experience what you should do, or what you could do, or what the best possible situation is. Extracting the best out of the situation, out of another experience. You know, I heard Stan, you know, when you watch a guy fall off a train and say, man, that must have hurt. Well, you know, I don't need to experience that to figure out, you know, that's not a good thing. You know, what I need to figure out is, okay, how do I not fall off a train? Maybe I don't get on top. But the issue is, sorry, no jokes today. The issue is that you've got a platform with your children because they hear you. Okay, my children hear me. Okay, because they hear me, it is my responsibility. Because I'm the head of the household, it is my responsibility to give them the best I can give them. I don't know of a place, like somebody said earlier, I don't know where to go to get the kind of information I need to get to go to. Well, the Bible I can't think of it. A friend of mine told me some years ago that he had a problem with his son. He didn't know where to go with it, and I didn't know where to get the answer for him. And I said, let me call you back. And I prayed over it, and I thought about it, and said, let me go to the Word and figure out where to give him his answer. I gave him his answer, and he could not believe that I actually went to the Bible, that old, old book, to give him a prop, huh? To give him an answer to a problem that happened with his family in this day and age.
Wow. He
could not believe that to be the case. Now, since that point, that brother has read the Bible more than once. But he didn't. But until that point, he hadn't read it all. I don't think. I'm not sure. But the issue is, he didn't see that as being his source. But if you grow up with that being your source, if you grow up with that with that being broken down for you, if you grow up with that being an innate part of your psyche, you know that God is your source. You know that that's the way you got to go. You know. It's not a question of maybe I should, maybe I shouldn't.
Yeah. Your girl's going to have a head start.
Exactly the point I'm making.
Mm-hmm.
A point I did not have.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Love my mom, but she had to run the house by herself because Dad was out starting other families.
Yeah, and that's what I like about the brothers on this call. Brothers on this call don't make excuses.
No.
I mean, we all had our situations and life experiences, but, I mean, it's like, all right, deal with it. And, you know, that's what I enjoy about this call, because it's so easy to sit back and say, oh, you know, I didn't have a daddy, or I didn't, you know, my grandmama mm-hmm. raised me, so I'm going to, you know, do what I do. But, you know, I just think it's admirable that the guys on this call just man up and say, you know, yeah, I had some issues, but I'm working through them. And you have to confront them, and you know, first thing is about acknowledging those issues and just
right.
You know, working through yeah. it.
But just being able to pick up the phone, I don't have enough fingers and toes to name how many guys that I said, hey, look, this phone call, man, that we do every Tuesday night, man, let me tell you, you need to get on it. They just don't do it. I hear their problems. I listen to them. And my boy, you know, I don't give him, you know, I give him advice if asked, like any one of us do. But just the fact that to pick up the phone and to be a part of it, to make an effort, is what I'm saying, and whatever it might be, that's admirable.
Yeah, and Tony, you know, joked the other day about how, you know, he may get some of that same feedback, and he's like, yeah. Call me on Tuesday at this number. Instead of, you know, talking to them about their problems, just say, you know, I'm not available right now. Call me on Tuesday night, 9:00. We'll talk
because, you know, I sent out the emails, and it was the point where I was sending out 100 emails a week. And to most of these people, they were people that called me up. And I'm not a marriage counselor by any stretch of the word. I know, you know, I'm on my second marriage, so I'm not the one to ask about your marriage issues. But, you know, friends of mine, you know, we were hanging out or whatever, they come and say, okay, well, you know, this is going on in my marriage, that's going on in my marriage, blah, 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 blah. Or I would notice certain things, and I'd say, okay, well, I'd send them the emails. I think that they would appreciate it. You know what I mean? And they would never call in. And I'm like, man, if you're having issues and you just want to talk, this is the perfect form. Just get on and talk and listen. But you'd be surprised how many people do not want to get better. They're just happy with being miserable. They're just happy with having those same problems in their marriage. You know what I'm saying? And those are the people. Yeah, and those are the people that make up the stereotype that we have to deal with. You know what I mean? So, because one lady got on, you know, on our chat by mistake, and she said, "I didn't know that there were sensitive brothers still out there." She couldn't believe it. She heard the call by mistake and said, I can't believe my ears what I'm hearing." You know what I mean? Like, we're just a rare breed. You know, so Simon, you make a great point, and I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I did it.
You were here. My parents didn't talk. My parents didn't talk. My parents didn't. Not my father didn't talk. We all seem to hear that, but my parents just didn't talk. You know, this, and you speak when you're spoken to. There was not a lot of communication in the household. Anybody ever hear that?
Yeah, for sure.
Hey, let me tell you, I remember that conversation today. I said it to my kids. I think that's just something I probably just said to my kids tonight. Don't speak unless you're spoken to.
But that's something in the African American community that's something that me personally feel like that we have to break, because I see other you know, ethnic groups, you know, white people, that actually give their kids a voice. Now, sometimes, and you know, from our point of view, they give them too much. But I think it is important that you involve your kids or give your kids some type of dialogue. And I'm going back to what the brother was saying and the point I was making before about choice. Give your children some type of dialogue or some type of involvement, and you have to in family, because they're not going. If they don't know, if you tell them every time that, you know, you listen, grown folks talking, go in the next room. You know, you're hindering them. I really believe you're hindering them, and I really think that goes back as far as, you know, where our people came from as far as in this country with slavery, about being in that little box, you know, being controlled. And we spill it over to our kids. You know, you don't talk when these certain people talk. You know, keep your thoughts to yourself or whatever. I think that's a bad thing. I don't think that's good in no kind of way.
I'm really dealing more with the fact that people. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm finished.
Well, I'm really dealing with the fact that people, with the interaction that parents have with one another, and the fact that what happened. You know, people say, "Well, I've been married to my wife for 30, 40 years." I got Sunday. I was telling me, my wife, you know, I've been married for 42 years. That woman won't listen to me for nothing, and just went on complaining. I was like, okay, we don't talk to each other at all. She's just using me for this and the other. I was like, okay, I got it. Okay, now what's the chance, though, that they don't talk and laugh with one another? Well, the chances are pretty high that they don't talk and laugh with one another. If you can't laugh with your spouse, something's wrong.
Yeah.
Something's wrong. You know, I mean, you know, you should be able to get together and be able to look at each other and laugh. You know, without words, you should just know each other well enough and love each other enough that you can just enjoy some stuff. You know,
and you know what?
Go ahead. Please go ahead.
Finish.
I'm done.
Okay. Well, I mean, I actually wanted to address that issue because it seems as like, back to the topic, the head of household, it seems as that somebody is neglecting their role.
Responsibility, absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? And it may be in the figure of a male.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, we're still responsible for that laughter. We're still responsible for that peace, that fun. You know what I mean? We have to make, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but at the end of the day, we still have to make sure that these activities go on in the house. Because if we allow the silence and the not talking and the passing like strangers in the night, you know, we are not taking care of what our role is, you know. So I honestly believe that there's something wrong and that we have to get back on top of our job when those things happen in a marriage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think Andrew said it best earlier. I hope he's still on about we're going to be held accountable, you know, for our families and for the decisions we make for our household, for our kids. And, you know, we have to remember getting back to the topic a little bit, you know, especially regarding the kids, that, you know, the husband is to love his wife above all other human beings.
Yep.
All other human beings. And, you know, the husband is to be considerate and tender. And, you know, Ephesians 5, which I read earlier, I mean, they teach that the husband is to cherish his wife. And this means that she is to be treated with tenderness, affection, and, you know, that since love must be fair, there's to be like a warm, demonstrative love relationship. And the husband has a responsibility of not only demonstrating his love and concern, but telling her. And he should not, you know, sit in self-absorption that, you know, he does not communicate with her socially, mentally, verbally, physically, or whatever, you know, just other than during sex. But, I mean, if that's the only time that affection and consideration is shown, guess what? Your wife is going to think she's just a piece of meat,
right?
You know, a sex object. So, you know, we definitely want to do that, don't want to do that. So, I mean, it's just all about accountability. And, you know, we have to remember that, you know, that we are supposed to love our wives above all other human beings, period.
How many of us have told our wives that has broken, just like you said it, has said it to them just like that, this is my role. This is a husband, this is my role. This is what I do as far as me being a husband, me being the head of household, me being the, or whatever. Just said it literally, that this is my role. You know, give it to them. Or have we just tried to just show it? It's important to show it, but have we ever just communicated just like that?
I think that's really, really, really something, Patrice, because sometimes we get some flack on things that we feel we need to do, and I think that's a great way to say, you know, I mean, respectfully, you know, this is my role, okay?
Wow.
I'm going to lead this family in prayer. I'm going to lead this family in Bible study. I'm going to lead this family in whatever issues that may, you know, be in conflict with you know, or taking flack, and just lovingly say, I understand, but this is my role. I think that's a great way to handle that, man.
And put a little topic on it with saying, please respect my role. Just respect
exactly.
My role. It's what I have to do.
Yeah. That's a whole point of.
Because we don't get it. I mean, it's just like we talk about, let me get in this house, and but just like how we don't always see the size of man because we're wired differently. We don't always see what women, the signs they're giving off and things like that. And when you argue and everything like that, it always come down to, I know in my situation, it has always come down to, man, if you just said it instead of, you know, leaving this out so I know to pick it up or something like that, then things would be different. We always get back to communication. It is communication, maybe in a very elementary form, just saying it specifically, look, this is what I do. This is what I expect. This is what I expect from you, you know, and this is what you should do. And how do you feel about that?
Yep.
And it's all about
the conversation,
you know,
that takes, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, about the respect piece, you know, it's about honor, too. I mean, we have to honor our wives, and, you know, I think 1 Peter or somewhere around that, you know, teaches the husband is to honor his wife. I mean, fellas, I mean, she gave up her name to take yours.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, honor means that you should show her some respect, and, you know, this involves courtesy, consideration, emotional support, you know, and just something as small, or we think is small, but be sure that you do not ridicule her in public, you know, by making snide comments about her. I mean, she wears your name and is viewed to be as a part of your body. I mean, she is not perfect, you know, as you already know. And we do not expect perfection. You know, it says in Ephesians, you know, forbear one another. But, you know, this means to be gentle toward her. You know, you can achieve this by controlling your temper, you know, abstaining from physical violence, you know, just having restraint in what you say about her and around her. It's about honoring your wife.
Mm-hmm.
Can
we put on
Go ahead.
It would have been amazing to learn this before I got married. It sounds like conversations we should have before
we even enter into an agreement.
Absolutely. And that's what I mentioned Rodney, before.
Rodney, what you're saying is we can't beat them anymore?
No. But, you know, to the brother's comment, you know, I mentioned earlier, you know, I don't know if you were on at the beginning, but, you know, Tony actually, you know, called it and said, you know, we were just talking a couple of weeks ago, and we were literally saying that this, you know, this little call, you know, as small as it is in its infancy stages, this is a prerequisite for marriage, you know, because if you're, you know, looking for that your leading lady, if you know, not married or, you know, whatever your situation is, and, you know, you're thinking about getting married or you're engaged, I mean, these are the type of conversations you need to be having, like the brother just said, before you walk down the aisle. Because you may find out something just from the conversation about, well, you know, well, you tell your wife, well, I'm going to be the head of household. And she said, no, you're not. I'm going to be an independent woman. I'm going to have my own bank account. I'm going to pay my own bills. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. You're going to have problems if she's not on board up front. You know, so you're exactly right that, you know, these conversations, it's unfortunate, but, you know, these conversations should be had prior to walking down the aisle in front of the crowd and saying, I do.
I agree, and this is not trickled down in the home or with friends or in the street. This is what needs to be done before you make a female your bride, your wife.
Well, that's all being evenly yoked.
And I'm going to tell you, we talked about this a few weeks ago, brothers. Almost afraid to have that conversation. Because you're scared, you know, it's all good and y'all loving each other. I really like her. She really like me and all this. And I don't want to mess this up. I don't want to say something. I don't want to tell her this is how I feel about this because that might push her away. And the truth of the matter is, if you got any kind of sense, you would do it because to find out later, it's going to cost you in so many ways, not just financially. It's going to cost you a lot more.
Yeah.
Somebody made a comment about unequally yoked just now.
No, I simply said that is what's called being equally yoked. I mean, coming to an agreement. You know, when I think about this, I'm telling you, I'm excited about this Bible reading because a lot of stuff comes out in these conversations. I mean, in these readings, and then the breaking down of what we just read. I'm trying to imagine what it would be like if they say, well, this is the man I want to marry. Really? You sure? Okay. Why don't you guys do the year together without me or with me, whichever one. Why don't you guys do the year, the Bible reading, and make sure you have the conversations too. Let's make sure we understand where we stand.
Hey, fellas, can I throw one more market rent in there before we begin?
Go ahead.
All right, so If we're considered the head of household, then why is it that when the wife is mad, that nobody's happy in the household?
The Bible says that it's better to live in the corner of the room.
We can't beat him anymore.
The Bible
says
can't
beat him anymore. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
It's better to live on be on the corner of the roof than in the house with a nagging wife. That's in the Bible.
I mean, I just had to throw that out there because everybody has heard it. And everybody, as a married man, has told somebody when the wife is mad, everybody is down there.
Happy wife, happy life.
That's right.
Hey, here's a simple answer to that. It kind of goes back to what Rodney said earlier. But, you know, as they say, the man's the head of the house. He's head of the house. But in actuality, you know, to answer your question, it's the – and I'm not married, so, I mean, this is just pure speculation and based on what I saw from my mother and father growing up. The man is the head of the house, but it's the woman who essentially makes it a home. And, you know, that being said, that goes back to what Rodney was stating earlier, that, you know, if you're doing everything, you know, to make sure your wife is happy, you're complimenting her, you're loving her in every way, and not just physically, then, you know, you're going to have a overall happy home.
Yep.
If you're not, then you're just going to have a house, and that house is going to be upset and disgruntled. So, I mean, yeah, it's a saying, and it might be a wonder of the world, but that's how I look at it. It's the man's house, the woman makes it a home.
Sounds like your woman's going to be happy.
I hope so, man.
And you know why? Because he getting the boot camp right here every Tuesday. Every Tuesday. Good words. Good words.
That's right. Or you better have a $1 million man cave somewhere in the
middle. One or the other. You need something.
But I mean, that just goes back to what we were just talking about. If you have these and you know these situations before you've married this person,
mm-hmm.
if you're going to now want to respect you and your needs and your rules and your words, and she gives you some type of confidence in how to raise your kids, you got to also keep her happy too. So is it a thing that now head of household and husband / father is separate? Do you separate the two? Is it really two jobs?
No.
What are the areas again? Head of household and what?
/ you know, one area is you know, you're the head of household, you're responsible for these A, B, and C things, but you also are a husband and a father, and you're responsible for these things. Is it separate, or should you combine the two?
It's one big job.
One big job.
Hey, can I ask a question? As head of household, are we responsible for the marriage maintenance? Are we responsible for calls like this or maybe couples retreats or things of that nature? Are we responsible for finding out when the wife isn't happy and seeking counseling? Is that our job too? Or should we, you know, be in a situation where we have to wait for our wife to come to us and say, well, we need to do some marriage maintenance. We need to get a marriage checkup or go get some counseling from a pastor or something like that. Is it our job to be on top of that as well?
I think it comes down to the same thing that when I said before, as the responsible person, we're responsible, bottom line, end of the day, for everything. That's what responsibility means. That we are, you know, as the head, we are responsible. Just like in my corporation, I am responsible. And it's the same thing as the head of the household, the head of the family. We have to be cognizant of the temperature in the family. We have to open our eyes and open our hearts. You know, a good question to ask our wives is, hey, you know, is there anything that I could do to make this marriage better? And that's a question I ask my wife. Is there anything that I could do to make this marriage better? Let's talk about it.
Yeah, but
I would even say, a lot of the times it's not even really asking the question. It's almost like you have to be the quarterback of the game, be able to read that defense, get to the line, and call an audible if you need to. You know, because
is being responsible the same as doing everything?
Oh,
being responsible for everything is that doing everything as well? That's what I'm
like
hearing.
You should, as the person that's responsible, in my opinion, you should be willing to do everything if you have to. I mean, what if something happened to your wife and you had to? Would you say, well, bump that, I'm not signed up for this, I'm not doing everything? Get your lazy butt up. I don't care if you're sick. I don't care if you're wounded. I don't care if you're crippled. You know, marriage is not 50-50. Marriage is 100-100, and you have to be willing to do everything. Now, 99.9% of the time, you're not going to have to do everything, but you have to be willing to do everything.
Yeah, and that's I guess, my question, Andrew, is that, you know, regarding the whole marriage maintenance piece, I feel that I do a lot of marriage maintenance, but I'm tired. I mean, there's no reciprocation on the other half's part. And, you know, I love my wife, you know, that's not a problem, but it's like, you know, I'm on the call every Tuesday night to better myself as a husband and a father. You know, I'm, you know, getting little cars, I'm getting the flowers, I'm, you know, getting a babysitter going, you know, here or there just to have an evening out. But it's like, it gets to a point where I'm just like, well, I'm tired of setting up the date night. I mean, can we get some reciprocation here? Because I don't know about anybody else on this call, but I'm doing the marriage maintenance piece, and I'm tired. I need some help.
So Rodney, can one person be in a marriage?
No.
That's my point.
Okay.
No.
One person can't be in a marriage. But when you look at it, we understand what our role, especially as Christian men. I know, you know, Rodney, personally, as a Christian man, we are Christ in that home. And what if he treated us that way? I've been chasing you for all these years. I'm tired of chasing you. I'm tired of wooing you. You're my bride.
Yes, but Ephesians also talks about that we're not saved by works, but we are saved for works. So
we're not talking about your salvation.
Hold on a second. So Christ also, no. I know you're not talking about salvation, but you're using Christ as the analogy, saying we're the Christ in our house. So therefore, if Christ says that we're not saved by our own works, but we are saved for works, so there's a participation that must take place, and he gives the if-then statements and all the commandments, and he says, if you do this, you're going to reap this. So there is a give and take in a relationship, an interrelationship, whether that's husband or wife, Christ and the church, however you want to look at it, Christ and the Father, for that matter.
Exactly.
He said, if you prepare me a body, I'll go. I'm going to go and do the work that I see you do. This is the work that you tell me to do. I'm going to go and do it. I have to be about my Father's will. So there's always in a relationship, there's always a participation. It was never meant, never structured, never created for one individual to be an island unto himself.
No doubt about that. But, again, it comes down to what are you willing to do to fight for your marriage? How long are you willing to, let's call it, suffer? Because on both sides, there's men and women that are, you know, dealing with the same issue. How long do you have to suffer is what you're saying. How long do you have to do it without saying, I'm tired, I'm done? And, you know, it's nice to say that we'll never quit, we'll never stop. I don't know if any of us can actually do that. Especially not without some serious leaning on Christ, in my opinion. But I think that the reward for staying diligent, that might just be your cross you have to bear. You know, and the only way you can make it is with his mercy. Hopefully, the Bible talks about, you know, we win people, we win our spouse, by walking, you know, in love in Christ, and not, you know, they may have, you know, like we talked about last week, the baggage. They may have baggage that they're carrying in and just waiting for you to say the heck with it.
Well, this is Ryan. I'm Rodney's brother.
And this, what's up, man?
Hey, how's it going? I think we're overcomplicating a simple question that Rodney was asking, and I've heard it from other guys before too, in saying that, you know, basically if it wasn't for me, like, you know, setting up social outings and things to do, we wouldn't go anywhere because my wife wouldn't do it. But I've known, there's a book called the Five Languages
of
Love, or Five Love Languages, and not everybody.
Five Love Languages.
And not everybody shows love the same way. So there are people who, you know, in a marriage think that, you know, they see their participation as, they see it in different ways. And so if you're in a situation where you feel like, well, you have the wherewithal or the vision, the urges to schedule things and to have social outings, then that may well be your role in that relationship. And just because your spouse is not doing it may not necessarily mean that they're not participating in the marriage, but maybe that's just not their personality. Because I've heard that multiple times from coworkers, and you have guys who love to get together with friends, love to have other couples over. And you have wives who are just the opposite, but are happy. You know, they're not upset. They're not discontented in their marriage. They're just content to go to work,
go home, take care of the kids, cook, and go to bed.
Yeah, good words, and you hit it right on the nose, bro. And you know, because my wife is not affectionate, but the problem with that is I've been in error because I haven't articulated it as well as I could, and I think that the reality is that you know it's not in my personality to wash clothes. I don't know about y'all. But I, you know, have stepped up the plate, and you know, I do what I do around the house. So I mean, but I think that oftentimes, you know, we, as Simon, you know, so eloquently says, you know, we let, you know, sometimes we let our wives get away with this stuff, where it's like we stepping up to the plate and we're going above and beyond, and they just on the receiving end. And you know, I think that you know, somebody mentioned it, that this is a two-way street here, and I think that you know, just in the few comments. I know that I haven't articulated this to my wife like I should. I have not went to her and said, you know what, I'm going to need you to step up to the plate. And you know, I'm tired of planning all the date nights and getting the babysitters and, you know, making the arrangements. You need to help me out. Because, you know, I enjoy doing it, but I don't want to do it 100% of the time. I'm sorry. This cannot work like this. And I need to tell her that up front, because she responds, you know, she don't respond to the passive stuff. She responds to the straight up, give it to me raw. Yes, you know, my feelings might be hurt, but, you know, don't sugarcoat it. And, you know, but I'm so passive, you know, in dealing with her that, you know, I don't do that because I know it's going to be hurtful. So, you know, that's what I just realized. I need to be more articulate in my communication with her because I know that that's not in her personality. It's not in her nature to do that, you know. And she has, you know, done a few things. You know, I give her some credit where credit is due. She has done some things, and I'm just like, you know, you would never do that, you know. So, but I think she needs to, I just want her to do, you know, more of it because I'm thinking about things all the time where I think it's just, you know, she thinks about it from a convenience factor. Okay, well, I'm not working today. Well, I guess I'll go take Rodney to lunch. You know, it's not a thought that comes up weeks in advance, like in my case on the other side. So.
Yeah, well,
and I think basically, go ahead.
That's a communication thing, and I think we've said this before on the call, where that's you really knowing your spouse and your relationship. Of course, everyone's situation, you can't apply to your own relationship. I think that's why the divorce rate is so high, because everyone is in everyone else's relationship, or I should say we allow everyone to be in our relationships. You know your spouse supposedly better than anyone else. They're supposed to know you better than anyone else, and you two work on things according to how you work on things, and it's in line with the moral principles that are followed in the biblical guidelines that God has given us. But there is a give and take, and there's nothing wrong. And like you said, you know your wife likes it for you to give it to her raw. Just tell her exactly how you feel, and if it hurts her feelings, it hurts her feelings. But at least she'll grab hold of it. She'll understand it. You give it to her that way. Maybe she does. I don't know. Maybe she does. Maybe she doesn't. But nonetheless, you're giving it to her the way you know how to talk to her, not the way some book told you to talk to her, not the way Dr. Phil told you to talk to her, or Judge Judy or whoever else is in your relationship. Because when you do that, you bring that outside influence into that relationship to some degree. I'm saying eat the meat, throw the bones away. I'm not saying don't listen to anyone. But when you do that, you bring that outside influence, and then she automatically will say, that's not you. Now you're changing. And that could end up destroying that relationship. But going back to a point of the role, and this is why I asked it, the husband has a role, the wife has a role, it's clearly defined, I think, in the Bible, or what your role is, and it's only for you to operate. Matter of fact, you only made vows to operate under that. Matter of fact, you are only created and built to do the role and the function that you have made vows to do as a husband. You cannot, as much as you would like to, as much as you would like for the relationship to work, and you just work both roles until she comes on board, you cannot operate in the wifely function. You have to operate in the husband function. Now, if you do the husband function well enough, you won't have to operate in the wifely function. She will step up to the plate and do whatever it is that the role is designed for her to do. But so in saying that, it's not that you have to do more take on more because she's not doing her part. No, you have to examine yourself and say, what a part of my role can I do better?
Exactly. There it is. Wow.
Well, maybe Rod's wife doesn't want to plan anything because she's worried about how much it's going to cost, and Rod might have a problem.
That's my brother. He knows. He knows. Be like, yeah, we ain't got the money for that, honey. Yeah, cancel that. Cancel that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, that's...
Oh, I got a window open?
Yeah.
I got a window open?
Vacuum it or something.
Somebody drive. Just drive.
Huh?
Whoa.
There you go. Yeah.
You roll the window up.
As a person
in
marriage, you know, you're expressing, a need that's not being met. And, you know, that's something that the two of you have to work out. But, yeah, you have to bring it up in order for it to be known.
Yep.
I want to throw out something else, too, as a thought I had probably an hour ago, but just couldn't get a word in there. I think one of the things that kept coming up regarding being the head of the household, people were commenting on some of the shortcomings of other men in their lives, and you know, maybe it's their dad or uncle or somebody. But I think one of the things that I've realized as I've grown older is, you know, as head of the household, I think, and as a Christian man, you ought to be thinking about, you know, I think one of the things that you'll find in men that you saw shortcomings in as a father, as a husband, is that they weren't thinking very far down the road. And I think a lot of the guys here, you know, people are talking about the children and how they don't want their children to see, or how they do want their children to see good examples of how, you know, a man and a husband should be in a household. And I think as head of the household, I think the vision piece is very important. You know, knowing, realizing that the things you do, the decisions you make, will have impacts generations beyond your current generation. And I think a lot of men who had shortcomings weren't thinking along those lines. They were thinking, you know, what I want then, what's good for me, and not considering the impacts of future generations.
That's heavy.
Because a lot of us, you, when you have kids and you get married, I think it's, you know, we all do these things, and because this is what we want to do. But in accepting that, you know, there's a time, you know, the more knowledge you get, the more responsibility you get. It's just when you have those kids or when you get married, it's accepting. It's a hard thing for us to accept, or maybe we don't even think about the fact that we got to put some of our personal things aside. A lot of us don't want to give it up. And you just don't want to give up that you're going to have to sacrifice what really sometimes comes down to your own happiness. You know, being happy about some things, or you might have to learn to be happy about other things, or learn to be happy in a different way. That's a tough thing. So I think that that's what I said. That's a heavy thing. Really, when you think about it, as basic as that sounds, that's really heavy.
That is heavy. Wow. Anybody else want to reflect on that?
I do want to go back to when Rodney said it, because I am that guy that is very, very important that I think that we know and understand, or that our wives know and understand. Let me go back to we know and understand that as head of household, you know, we're head of household, but it just being head of household doesn't mean that wifey just get to sit back and be the person that she want to be, or get to just do whatever she want to do, and then we have to, however she act, we just have to figure out how to fix it. Nah, she got to, we need some cooperation from her. We need her to, she has a role. Like what Tony said, she has a role, and it's important she understand her role as well as we understand ours. You know, and it is not our total responsibility. It is not up to us. You know, I gave the example some weeks ago that, you know, when you get to heaven, God ain't gonna judge the both of y'all together. He's gonna judge you as an individual.
Now, Simon, some would argue that point by their comments, and let me tell you what I'm saying, because I've heard people tonight say that we have to lead by example, and one of them was reading the Bible and going to church, and no matter if they don't go, we just have to keep doing it because we know that it's right, that it's fruitful for the family, so we keep doing it, and hopefully they catch on. Just like Rodney also said that, you know, if you do these things, you won't have to worry about taking on her roles because then she's going to take on the roles that she's supposed to take on by watching you. So is it our responsibility to, in other words, let them know what their roles are if they don't know as head of household?
Yes, I respond. If the word says, you know, it's so many different ways to say it, but God let us know, you know, these are the things that you do, these are the things that you don't do. Now, it's up to you whether or not you're going to make it to heaven or hell. But if God didn't tell us that, then we'd have an argument with God. But God has put it out there. He told, you know, these are the things. This is what you have to do to go to heaven. These are the things you have to do. You have to accept these. So that choice. So here you go. Here's the choice. Now, if you don't do it, that's on you.
So if she doesn't do it, so if we've done our due diligence to let her know what our role is in the marriage, we have the conversation like you said earlier, this is my role, respect my role, and then we can flip it and say, okay, now this is your role. And then we also reinforce that conversation by actions. And then she doesn't do it. That's what you're saying? And then
that's
she doesn't
exactly
do it after that point.
That's
okay.
Exactly what I'm saying. That's precisely what I'm saying.
Understood.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense. I mean, because a lot of times we don't do that due diligence. We don't let her know what our roles are by example. We don't let them know what their roles are by our example again. And then when things goes haywire, we're like, man, how do I get this woman back in line? How do I get my marriage back? But we didn't do what we were supposed to do in the beginning. And that's what happened. That's why a lot of people are divorced now, because we didn't have these conversations. We didn't have a chance to talk and find out what we need to do. We knew nothing about marriage maintenance. You know what I mean? It's like, go to work, come home, help with the homework, blah, 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 wake up, maybe make love to them, go back the next day and do it all over again. You know, but we didn't have we didn't ever sit down and say, okay, well, how can I keep this ship afloat? You know, and then we don't realize half the time till it's too late. You know, so, but if you say that if we've done our due diligence and we've done all that we can do and then they still walk away, then my question is, what do we do at that point? And I think that's the same question you were asking.
I don't think there's much you can do, to be honest. I think ultimately what ends up happening is, you know, it's like, you know, we have the word, we have the, you know, basically us doing our due diligence and being able to present how we should be handling things and the course of action we should take. But I think ultimately what it comes down to is the education that's also being instilled in these women. And what I mean by that is we're all, you know, some of us are sitting over here and we talked about how we have daughters, we have children and things like that. I mean, we're going to basically raise them with the word or talk to them about different things. But at the same time, we're going to talk to them about having their own, being educated, not letting someone walk over you, not running behind somebody, not doing this, that, and the other. So ultimately, it becomes this ongoing trend or something that continues to be an issue, because you get in a marriage or you're with somebody and you're trying to tell them what their role is and you're trying to explain your role as head of household and do these things, but what they've been raised off of is completely different. And they may have gone to church. They may have been sitting right on the front row. They may understand all of that. They may read the word with you and sit down and get all that. But you being a father to this young girl is going to say to them, you know, you need to have your own. You need to make these decisions. You need to recognize when things aren't well. So I think ultimately that's where the conflict sometimes comes in with the head of household, because I know that that's I mean, I know that's what I would say to my daughter. I mean, you're going to do these things, and you're going to be someone's, you know, hopefully, you know, in a loving marriage and someone's wife and a mother and all this stuff. But if stuff is not right and someone is not leading by example, then you, bald head of household, you need to have some common sense. And I think that's where we sometimes get in these dilemmas, or why this question is where it is right now with, well, what if I told her this and I told her this and she still won't do it and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, there are all those times where some women are just like, forget you, I'm just not doing it. But ultimately, sometimes, I would say, I would probably argue 50% of the time, it's a 50-50 shot, that 50% of the time people are just using common sense and saying, huh, yeah, I'm probably not going to do that. And it's based off of how we raise these young girls. I mean, I'm just throwing it out there because I know that I would be this person, and I'm going to be, that's going to go to church, lead by example, doing this, that, and the other in the household. But the way that I interact with my daughter and talk to her about being able to make decisions, have her own, use common sense, have an emergency backup plan, and know how to get out of a situation in 30 seconds, that's not going to not happen. It's not going to not happen. I'm going to do that. So I guess I'm part of the problem. And I think for a lot of us on this call, when you really think about, you know, whether the women that we're marrying or the women that we have married or whatever, they've probably been told the same thing. And I don't think it's not their fault, you know. But this is what comes about. I mean, look at everything right now, from just going from the cartoons and the, you know, and looking at the, you know, what is it, the pop, not the Power Rangers, but whatever the you know, the girl groups and all these other things about female power and this, that, and the other. That has nothing to do with head of household. Not anything. That's not even mentioned. Of course, you can't mix, you know, television and religion in certain aspects. I get that. But it has nothing to do with it, not even remotely. So the conflict, so the conflict and issue, I think for us, is when we're having this discussion about, you know, at this point with the regards to head of household and women not falling in the line or playing a position or recognizing that we're sharing this or this, that, and the other, it's difficult. And I think that we might be part of the problem.
Let me ask you this, and because I got two daughters. I have two daughters. I have a daughter that's about to be 13 in December, and I have a 7-year-old. And I'm asking myself, but I'm asking this, I'm throwing this out, because I haven't done it. I don't know when the point you do it. Do you teach your daughter, can we teach our daughter how to be a good wife, or how to be, or do we want to teach our daughter how to be submissive to her husband?
No.
Because how many people, and you say no, but.
You said to your husband, that sounds like a broad. And I've heard this from women.
Oh, well, she's going to be married. God willing, my daughters are going to be married one day. And if we're going to do it all the way around, you know, we just can't teach our daughter to be independent, to don't let that, you know, the don't. How do we teach her to the okay, well, this is what, you know, what a wife should be, that as far as what a husband expects? Because if no one taught your wife that, how can you expect your wife to teach her that?
That's a good point. And that's another good point, because there are a rack of women out here right now that have no idea. They don't have a clue because, again, going back to the independence, thinking for yourself, doing this, that, and the other, you know,
there's a lot of boys
and just
have
so
no
many
idea.
Things out there, and it's out there right now. That's a good point. And as a guy, I mean, what can you? I mean, you can say some things, you can talk about certain things, you can kind of lead by example in some areas. But I mean, if you look, if this daughter, this child's growing up, both children in general, even your sons, if they're growing up and they're witnessing this interaction, and mom's not really adhering to what dad's supposedly telling me that this role is supposed to be, or the word's supposed to be, then that's conflict. And I think ultimately that's where we get into, you know, you're in a marriage or you're in a situation and you're trying to be this head of household, but you got this person that's trying to be an island in some areas.
Wow.
When really they need to be a peninsula.
Yeah. Can you imagine yourself? Can you imagine yourself with your babies? Now, I'm thinking my babies. I don't know how, but can you imagine yourself, your daughter, 29, 28, 30 years old, coming to you and saying, "Hey, Dad, he won't do this, Daddy. He's doing this and this." Can you step back and say, "Well, baby girl, you know that is your husband. You know that's your husband."
You know what's amazing here is there's no I'm hearing that our children are going to replay what we went through. Well, I'm not hearing that we are preparing our children for their life. That's really the reason why I keep iterating about the regular Bible reading to get through this thing a year, the teaching throughout that thing, because I'm teaching them throughout this thing. I'm giving them. My children, when we bought a new house, and the first thing I had to do was teach them how to deal with children that were bullies, and how to work with them, how to talk with them, how to deal with it. My wife said, "I'm trying to live their life, okay?" And that's what I'm kind of hearing right now. We're not giving them the tools necessary to make a good decision. Or make good decisions. I heard the gentleman said, "Maybe I'm part of the problem." I doubt that. I think you're teaching your children as best you can to prepare them for what's going to happen, what's going to happen more than likely. But you're doing. But the point I'm trying to make is trying to, instead of expecting the worst, planning for and preparing them for the best, and then preparing them also for if things get bad, like you just said, the 30-second plan. Whatever you got to do, deal with that. That's a good thing to give them a heads up. It was a good thing when my children were 5 years old and they had to deal with bullies and how to deal with them. And I gave them a 1-2-3 method of how to work with it because it made their life good.
Yeah.
And that's what we can do now.
But can you teach your daughter to be submissive to her husband?
I can't.
To a godly husband, yes.
Well, see, but man, one thing I did, you know, in my younger days, what I would try to do is pick out parts of the Bible that I just liked, and I would just use that part. I'm getting better now with it. And one of the things that I used to like and I would throw out there to everybody was, beware of false prophets.
Yeah.
You know, and ultimately what happens in this case is I mean, the whole concept of being submissive, it sounds great, you know, but I can't sit there and tell my wife to if he's godly. The key word in that is if, not godly.
If. Thank you.
You know, so the scary part with that is I don't know if I can tell her to be submissive to somebody that's an if. You know, I know there's no guarantees, but I don't know if I can do that. And that's really scary. For me, I'm just like I'm saying I had to go back to a verse that I just liked and beware of false prophets was it.
So what do you do? You find out if this man understands what the word is and you understand it the same.
I don't even know if you'd be able to figure that out because...
If you study together, you can. I'm not talking about a two-week marriage or a two-month marriage.
Yeah, no, I'm not talking about it either, but I'm just saying, you know, ultimately just meeting somebody, talking with somebody. I mean, there's people that you meet up front and then cats get divorced or whatever, things come about 6, 7, 10 years down the line. And you thought that person was that. I mean, there's no way really to know that.
There's no way to really know it, but there's a lot better ways than what's happening these days. We don't do courting these days. You know, we have, we like them, have sex with them. That was great. Let's hang around for a little bit longer. Okay, now they're telling us to get married. Okay, well, you kind of fall into it. Okay?
Yeah, you're right.
That's you know if that's what you want your daughters to repeat, like I said earlier, experience is there are some very stupid, very experienced people. You experience the same thing you experienced before, and you experience the same stuff your parents experienced because nobody gave you the wisdom out of that experience. Now you may still make stupid decisions, but if you get the wisdom to have the chance to make good decisions out of it, a lot of people will make great decisions. And you know, I have to trust my children to be able to make good decisions once I've given them to them. Even though a lot of times I look at my child and wonder if she's brain dead, I find out a lot of other parents feel the same way. So I found out my children are normal. But I give them everything I can give them to have a chance to make wise decisions. I don't want them doing the same thing I did over again.
Right. And I think, you know, and equipping them with the opportunity to make those right decisions, that's not just the word, it's common sense as well.
Right.
And I mean, you
right.
But I think the tough part about it, though, is that particularly in some aspects of being able to be the head of household, you know, I don't want to say that sometimes a woman is a thorn in the side for being able to be that, but there are some difficult conversations that come up based off of her inability to be prepared. Because here's the thing. I guess I look at it like this. You know, whether you read the Bible, whether you read the Bible or not, there's still some fundamental things that even being a child of a home of just a woman raising me, my mom told me things that you look for in a woman. And she needs to fall into place with these things, and she's going to be a God-fearing woman, and she's going to be this woman and this, that, and the other. And this was coming from a woman. So when you get in these situations where you may have a wife or somebody that's coming from a home that has no idea, it hasn't been talked to them about, it hasn't been exuded, it hasn't been even demonstrated, the whole concept of remotely even just being able to take care of home, it's just not there. It's hard for you to be head of household. It's hard for you
to have that
conversation.
Okay, but hear what you just said. Number one, you said it's not just about just reading the Bible, okay, which means that when I speak, everybody apparently just hears, he's just talking about reading the Bible. That 2000-year-old book, please, my God, when is God going to wake up and figure out we're in 2009, okay? That's not what I'm saying. If everybody hears this, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying you read the word because it's life. There's a lot of life lessons in there, and if you will read, once you read it, you read things in there, and a lot of people are trying to figure out when to talk about sex. My children are 10 and 12 years old. We've talked about sex. Why? Because of Mary and Joseph. Okay? I gave them life lessons about this at this point simply because we're reading the Bible. I used it as a, you know, when I learned years ago. Now, if they're to be spouse, is looking to be their spouse by the time they've learned a lot about life, he better be a sharp cookie. Because he's gonna get questions. They're gonna need to know where he is on these issues, where he stands on these issues, and they're gonna watch his walk and not just his talk.
Well, I guess my.
The follow up to that is, you know, as men, we've gotten away from what this is what I've seen my father doing with my sister, is following them through the process of this is how a man's supposed to treat you, opening doors for him, taking them out, them you know, father taking the daughter out on Valentine's Day for dinner, just. Father and daughter day.
That's beautiful.
You know, this is how a man, if we take the opportunity right now while our kids are teenagers, they're going to hear all this other stuff in the street. I mean, it's the same stuff we heard when we were when we were that same age about sex. And, you know, as guys, we're, you know, sex hungry. However, if you get to your daughter early, after communicating what you just said, from through the Bible, through books, through, you know, talking to your daughter and say, listen, I'm going to show you what a man is supposed to, how he's supposed to treat you. And now you can accept this or you cannot. But this is how a man is supposed to take you. I'm going to be the one to take you out. I'm going to bring you flowers. I'm going to bring you, you know, I'm going to take you to the movies. This is how he's supposed to respect you at the movies. Then you better prepare your daughter for when you do give her that responsibility and say, okay, I'm gonna let you go out on this date with this guy. Right. That she knows what to expect.
Are you gonna tell her what a man will do? And this is what a man's supposed to do. Are you gonna have a conversation? And this is what a man, if he don't do that, this is what he will do.
Yeah. I mean, you got to go. I mean, yes, I believe so. To me, I believe so. I mean, that's what I've seen. My daughter's only 9, so I know she's getting ready to hit 10, so that's what I've been doing. You know, I have father and son days, but then I also have father and daughter days, you know, where you have to separate the two.
Now, also, the other gentleman made a perfect point, because I used to look at billboards, and they would talk about have commercials on TV were telling you you have to talk to your children about sex, because a lot of parents would avoid that, and the husbands would put it on the wives, and the wives would put it on the husbands. Nobody wanted to bring it up, and he made a perfect point. You know what I mean? At 10 and 9, whatever the ages are, he's talking about sex, but through the Bible. So the Bible has used, it's like
guys,
to knock down a barrier. You know what I'm saying? You no longer have to worry about the fear of how do you bring up the topic of sex with your child if you're having Bible study with them, because it's already there. They could be 4 or 5 years old and you're having Bible study, and bam, oh, guess where we're at now? Sex. And it's no big deal. You know what I'm saying? So I think that's wonderful.
Thank you.
Absolutely, and I agree that the Bible has to be looked at and has to be taken. We're talking about using the Bible as analogies and this, that, and the other. There's two very important things when we're trying to train children, when we're trying to educate ourselves, when we're just having, you know, Bible studies in groups, whatever, even on this call. There's a practical outflow of the Bible that we have to deal with in the 2009 way. We can't deal with our children. We can definitely have the Bible studies and read the Bible and go through the story, but they're not going to understand camels. They're not going to understand the slaughtering of goats on altars. And the, you know, so you're going to have to bring it home into 2009 analogies, or
right,
or the sexual teachings and everything else is going to go right over their head.
Exactly.
But there's also, and I think the most important part of it is the principle of it.
Yep.
You know, Bible is about principles, and that's what you teach. I mean, it doesn't go into detail on every subject that we want it to go into. What it teaches is principles. And if you can teach an individual principles, even though you haven't taught them the practical, they'll be able to figure out the practical because they already have got the teaching of the principle. So can you teach your daughter how to be submissive to a husband? Absolutely, especially when you yourself understand the definition on what submissive was meaning in the Bible in the first place.
Yep.
Submissive doesn't mean to hoard over or to take to usurp authority over. It's simply just saying it's being respectful.
Yep.
You know, when this man does whatever he's supposed to do, and I always go back to this principle, because whenever this man, or this husband, I should say, does whatever it is he's supposed to do in concerns to his role, not forcing the woman to do her role, not constantly nagging her to do her role, because this is kind of where women go in most cases. They nag us about doing our role. When we're not doing that, when we're just simply doing our role and doing it to the best of our ability, not to win her over, not to make sure we get sex that night, not to make sure that there's no arguments over this, that, sending flowers so we get out of the doghouse, not for those reasons, but when we are doing what it is that we're supposed to be doing, the woman has no problem to being respectful and or submissive to that husband as the Bible declares for her to be.
Exactly.
See, that husband and wife relationship deals with Christ in the church, and in no way did Christ hoard over and or take control over us and make us love him. He was good to us, or is good to us, and because he's good to us, and I'm saying us, the believers, and if you're offended by that, I apologize, but nonetheless, he's good to us to the point where we willingly give ourselves to him.
Right.
We willingly serve him. We willingly wait on him. We willingly do things. Stop cursing. We stop going to strip clubs. We stop doing certain things because we truly love him and we respect him. And that's what the submissiveness of that wife is to be for the husband. So can we teach him, going back to that question, can we teach our daughters or how to be good wives, and our sons being good husbands? And absolutely, we're leading by example. We're teaching them the principles. Yes, we're walking through the scriptures with them. But at the same time, we're giving them some 2009 practical outflows,
right,
and some examples in our own lives.
Wow. That's beautiful.
Yeah, good words.
Wow. Open mic time.
Yeah. I think before we get to open mic, let's do the learning moment. You know, what did we learn on tonight? Like, what did you learn about being the head of household, if anything? I'll kick it out to the group, and I'll close it down, and then we'll go to the open mic segment. So what did you learn? Somebody want to start it? What did you learn about head of household this evening?
Can I take
my role?
Oh, two
okay,
people
go ahead.
Speaking. Go ahead, brother.
I'll go next.
I learned to simply declare my role. This is what I see my job is here and my role is here. And you can't make another person go with the situation. As I said, I have the experience. I've learned the experience that I don't want my children to go through what I've gone through. I want to give them the best heads up I can for the life I can. So I need to implement that and continue that role. Unfortunately, I'm kind of still with some of you said yes, some of you no. This is a role where I can't make you. We've all agreed we can't make our wives do anything. What I would like for my wife to do is to be a part of this Bible study, because I think that will unite this family in a way that families just don't have. But I'm going to run it myself and just continue to run it until we stop. until we finish it. But I need to declare my role in this household. Spiritual leader of this household is on my head. I need to run it.
Words.
Good words. I teach this group, and I'm not a pastor. You know, I'm a humble servant, just like the next man. And I teach this group, the Royal Rangers, at church on Wednesdays. And I talk to them about, you know, the Bible. They're probably 8 to 12. Patrice, what are the ages of my group?
You have the 5 to 7-year-olds, and I have the 8 through 12.
Okay, so anyway, you know, they give you this big book. I didn't look through the big book because it was too much. So I started with Genesis, and I'm working my way down, okay? And they're really enjoying this, these young boys. They're really enjoying it because I make it fun, you know, and I give them little homework assignments to bring back. And, you know, but I'm getting blessed as well.
Yeah.
But from being on this call, I also have a 13-year-old and a 17-year-old teenage girls in my house, and I don't have Bible study with them. And I'm leaving it up to church. I'm leaving it up to the church to handle that, like I do for these other children. But from what I'm hearing on this call, I need to take that responsibility and do that as well, and maybe make another night, like a Thursday night. And it's a half an hour, you know what I mean? And instill a Bible study in my house with my own daughters. Now, it's good to reach outside the house, too, but I also got to, like the man said, I have to start at home. So that is the one thing that I got from this call, that my job is, no matter I think I'm the head of household and I got all these bases covered, blah, 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 that's the spirituality piece that I have to step my game back up in my own household. So that's what I got.
And I have to agree, because I didn't even think of that. I mean, you find yourself doing a lot of volunteer work outside of the home to help other kids become successful and get ahead. And, you know, and I also do it because my kids are also involved in some of these classes. So it's fun for me. So I'm trying to help them and with them. But other than that, like doing it just one-on-one with my son and daughter, I haven't done that. So just bringing that up, it was a while, like, I'm missing this stuff in my life that I should be doing this with the kids, not in front of other people, but also here at home when we're just one-on-one. So thank you for that, Tony, because you just opened my eyes.
Because honestly speaking, we don't really know if what they're learning in that class, because we're so busy doing our own thing. So we don't know if they're running around, if they're coloring. We don't know what they're doing. They could be just coloring Bible pictures. We don't know if they're really getting the word. So the way I see it as the head of household, I have to make sure that they're getting it. Just like the guys doing, start with Matthew, they're talking about sex, they're talking about this, that, and the other. They may even get into Jezebel, who knows? You know what I mean? But we have to make sure that they're getting it in the home. We can't leave it up to somebody else to do it.
You're right.
Anybody else?
What I learned, and this may just sound simple, but it's always the same thing I get every time I get on this phone call. What I've learned is that when I think I know, I just don't know. It's important to have some type of dialogue. I'm even in my situation, I'm still the head of my household. You know, I'm in the middle of a divorce, but I'm still the head of my household. My ex-wife and I, we still communicate and we deal with the children, but I can't be effective. I'm more effective because of these phone calls, and it's not a point that I think that I can, you can ever, any of us can ever feel like, okay, well, we got it. That's the last phone call I have to have. That's the last time I need to pick up the Bible. That's the last time I got it. It's just, I always get this every time I get on these phone calls. At the end of the phone call, by the time I get off, I realize that, you know what, I just took something else just to add to my repertoire, to add to my stockpile, my weaponry. Again, you know, all the bad things that come to my family. So that's just what I got out again tonight.
Good words. Any else? Anybody else?
You know, what I got out of it just further reaffirms what I already know, that I just need to continue to equip myself with a better understanding of the word to be able to lead by example. You know, like I said earlier, you know, just picking out my favorite parts is not going to play, it's not going to work as I look to basically lead my household and the lives of others as well. So, you know, that's really what I got out of it, is that you have to continue to seek out ways to educate yourself, because learning is all.
Anybody else?
Apply it to certain areas. So, yeah, that's what I got.
Good words, good words. Okay, anybody else? Because we're getting ready to do this open mic thing.
Yeah, I'll just say this, Tony. You know, I'll just say ditto, because I can't even begin to start what I learned on this call about being head of household, and I appreciate all the commentary, but, you know, I'll just say, you know, fellas, love your wives. You know, Paul said, you know, love your wife. He didn't say if you want to, when you feel like it. And, you know, as we love her, you know, we love ourselves, and we're fulfilling the role, ultimately, that the Lord wanted us to have, you know, which is the head of household. So I'll just encapsulate with that, but ditto to what everybody just said on a learning moment. But you can go ahead, open it up, man.
Well, the purpose of open mic at the end of the call is if someone wanted to talk about something that's off topic, that has nothing to do with what we're talking about tonight, just something that you said, look, I want to bring this to the call, I want just to get some opinions on people, I just want to say something and talk about it, and we'll, you know, allow some time for anybody to do that, because I know we spend a hard time trying to stay on topic, because if we get off topic, the conversation can go anywhere. But now is the time. Let's just get it off topic. Is there anything anybody wants to talk about in reference to marriage or children or anything they want to talk about? You have an audience.
I want my daddy record. Hey, I don't know what I'm talking about.
Well, I got something off topic. I got something.
Okay.
I was supposed to take this turkey out of the oven at 11, and I hear my wife stomping down the stairs at 11:05, talking about, thanks, Rodney. How what's the best way to apologize? I'm kidding, fella.
For,
I did forget to take a dirty out.
Turkey? I don't know, brother.
I just said, you're on your own.
Yeah.
You're on your own.
Yeah, because I'm looking like a turkey tonight. You know, I'm on the head of household, you know, and then I'm like, uh-oh. that chick, that turkey was supposed to come out 5 minutes ago, and she was asleep. Man, she gave me one of them looks that Peyton will give. I mean, it's, you know.
Hey, Rodney, I will take it off topic, as a matter of fact. Actually, you already took it off topic. And we kind of answered your question, but we took it a different way. You said earlier that you are on the call Tuesdays, you are trying to get the best information that you can be to be a better husband, but you don't feel that you're getting the same from your wife at home. And I'm kind of with you on that one, because me and you have talked about this. And what happens when we're trying to get right, you know what I mean? And we're talking and we're trying to be better, but they're not trying to get the same type of assistance that we're seeking.
Or not,
you know, it's like you're coming back brand new, but you're coming back, but they're not brand new. They're still in the same state. You follow me?
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, to answer that question, just, you know, one thing that I have learned is that you cannot really, it has to be something that she figures out on her own, you know, and wants to do for it to be genuine. Otherwise, it's going to go through the motions, and ultimately, it's going to have a negative effect rather than a positive one. Because you're right. I mean, I had a discussion with my wife the other night, and somehow it came up, but she didn't really see the relevance of the call. She just didn't. I don't know. And I was looking at her, and I was like, "Are you serious? You know, I'm working on ways to better myself." And she's like, "What, through that call you have?"
Wow.
And I was just like, "Well, okay. I mean, do you think that I'm just getting on the phone talking about the strip clubs every Tuesday? I mean, that's not what I'm doing, you know. Or where are we going to meet and actually get a drink after work for happy hour? No, that's not what I'm doing, you know. And then I had to point out to her, you know, you don't see how, you know, when I come back from the conversation the next day, I've got things that I want to share with you, stuff that I learned from the call, things that other, you know, I'm pulling from different points that gentlemen shared on the call. And it's like, I think to get at your question, basically, she's got to want to do it. Because ultimately, you're right. You're making yourself better, but then you're going back into the same battle every time. It's like Groundhog Day, the movie, you know? you're just playing it over and over and over. It's the same day.
Oh, my God.
I can
God.
Tell
you
what I told Tone.
It's Groundhog Day.
I told Tone last week that, you know, now that we're able to record these calls and save them, that, you know, I let my wife listen to it last week, and she got a better understanding by just sitting down listening to the call, and she had her opinions, but it got her to talking about relationships. So that you can use this call to get her on the call by just allowing her to listen to other men speaking. Instead of just telling her, say, "Hey, I want you now to listen to this call with me and see how it goes." You never know. Oh, I might want to get on this woman's call just to see, so I can hear what the women think about what you just said. And I'm going to go and tell it all. And that may be, you can use this vehicle right here as a way to maybe convince her more better to get on the female call.
Yeah.
That's on Thursday night.
And I think that goes back to what I said earlier about putting it, you know, actually, you know, telling her about the call is one person, but her actually listening to it, that's a whole different dynamic. And I think that's a great point that you mentioned, to actually say, you know, I'm not going to tell you about the call. Here, you listen to it for yourself. You know, you get from it what you will. And that'll have a positive impact on it.
Hmm. My wife has never listened to one of the calls, ever, ever. And for the life of me, I don't understand. Because most women will be like, "What are y'all talking about? I want to be in on it. I don't even know."
Mm-hmm.
She's never even made an attempt. Because I know she didn't, because she never came back and said anything. Never made an attempt. And I can't understand that for the life of me. And this is what I do, you know. I can't understand why, I mean, she didn't even try to listen to one of the calls. But she does get on the ladies' calls. That might be out of guilt, but she does get on the calls.
That's the first step. That's the first step. I can't even get my wife to do either or listen to it or get on the women's call. So
exactly.
You one step ahead of me.
Yeah. Well, my I guilted mine to do it.
Yeah.
So,
well,
I
agree with Peyton that I think if we push them, you know, you need to get on the call. You need to listen to this. It needs to be some, you know, some, as my mother would always say, you need some initiative. You know, you need some motivation on your own part, because that's when the blessing is really going to be, when they say, let me listen to what y'all are talking about. Let me take the steps. And what's the website? You know, where do I go? You know, then we can direct them and then, you know, let it do what it do. So.
Or you can trick them like you tricked yours, Rodney.
Yeah, that was a good trick. Should I tell that trick?
That was a good trick. You need to share that trick.
Yeah, basically on Saturday mornings, we listen to, you know, for those in the D.C. area, we listen to Audrey Chapman on the radio. She has a relationship show. Not as good as the virtual talk show on Tuesday nights, but it's a you know, show about relationship. And, you know, it's good, you know, conversation. And, they have people call in to have different topics every week or whatever. So, you know, anyway, long story short, a couple of Saturdays ago, I had downloaded the women's call on their first call, and I had burned it to a CD and popped it in the CD player. So when my wife came down, you know, she thought she was listening to Audrey Chapman. And, you know, her first thing was, you know, her first response was to be critical. I was like, and I didn't realize it at first. I didn't even, you know, notice, you know, that she didn't know it wasn't Audrey. I was actually just listening to it. And I was like, she really does not know if this is a CD or the women's call. She thought it was, you know, the real deal radio call. So I was like, don't be so critical. You know, this is, you know, then she started listening to it. It's like, oh, is that such and such? I was like, yeah. You know, and then she was like, oh. So, well, I don't know. I'm gonna put it in her car, you know. Put the CD in the car. Just have it playing, just coming on. And I don't know. But I'm going to have to do something. You know, I done messed up this turkey.
Yeah.
I done really messed up.
You done messed up, man.
Yeah, I done really messed up. This head of household, that doggone head of household. No. But you know, I don't know. I'm in the same boat you are, Tony. You know, back to your point, I'm just like, I don't know. You know, I'm trying to get better. You know, doing different things, different ways, and you know, on the flip side, it's no motivation at all. Everything's cool. So it's like, okay, but I need to do a better job articulating that. So that's on me. That's on the head of household. That's what the whole point of the call is. You know, what can the head of household do to change the situation? So I know what I got to do.
And I think, that's how I always look at these calls, is you just continue to add new tools to your tool belt, per se, to figure out how to, you know, become a better locksmith so you can unlock these locks, because it's literally crazy. I mean, there's a lot of times where, even through, you know, I like to say my wife and I have good communication. Sometimes that's good and that's bad, because we will speak our minds, you know. But it is one of those things where, you know, it's always. I mean, it's a task. I've said that before, and it's not that's the wrong word. It is a job. It is a serious, you know, everyday job, and working hard to make sure that you are contributing the best possible, you know, emotions, love, and everything to the marriage. And I think with our wives, you know, particularly, it's you can't make them. You just can't. I mean, you can set it up. You can have it laid out perfectly, but it has to be, everything's got to line up in some way, shape, or fashion. And if it doesn't happen, I mean, then ultimately it can backfire on you quick. And what you thought was actually a positive, you know, and you were coming at it correctly. You know, you had the proper body language, your tone was great, you know, you had everything going the right way, you weren't using a lot of hand gestures, appearing like it was going to be confrontational, you know, you weren't talking like you were a little kid or making her seem like she was dumb. You know, if you could line it up perfectly, and if it just doesn't happen, it can backfire.
Yep. Good word.
That's the word. Anybody else got anything for open mic? Nobody dealing with anything but me and Tony. I guess not. Tony, we ain't being good as households.
Let me put this out here to you, fellas. That now, my wife and I, you know, we have a condo in Florida as well, a two-bedroom, two-bath. And so we have three children, as some of you may already know just from the call. So one in college, one graduates high school this year, another graduates next year. So the goal is, just like the other gentleman on the call, you know, he owns his own business. We have a five-year plan. We're looking to you know, start a business, or storefront, I should say. We're doing the online thing now. And five-year plan to move to Florida. So here's where the drama sets in. So what she wants to do, right now we don't have a car down there, so that's a discussion for this coming year. You know, we want to get a car down there so we don't have to keep the cars when we do go down, and so on. So here's the challenge. The challenge, I'm saying, okay, let's just get a little two-door convertible in Florida, right? Let's just get a two-door convertible. We can enjoy it that way. We'll keep the two that we have now. And she's like, no, in 5 years, we need to come down there. We need to get a bigger house. And we need a big car because, you know, the kids will be coming, and she's already planning for when they get married and they're having kids, and she won't have enough rooms and everything like that. And so my thought is, well, no, now it's our turn. So the question to the brothers is, am I wrong? Am I selfish, did you think? Or should I be thinking along the lines of, it's our turn now?
Well, what I said in the beginning was it's the husband who has the last word when it comes to making decisions. So I said no, you know, don't be.
Except for the turkey.
Right.
Yeah, but you know, I don't. That's a good, you know, but it's, yeah, I think you're on the latter stages of raising kids, and you know, I think probably your vehicles probably are accommodating to them now. It's like,
uh-huh.
So you're going to get another one just to accommodate
right.
them and the grandkids. It's like, when am I going to have, when is the head of household going to get something for him?
Exactly.
So
exactly.
Just picture, you know, just say, this is for us, baby. You know, this is for me and you. We're going to be riding with the drop top. This is for me and you to be hanging out. Wouldn't you like that? Picture to it like that.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, when does it ever end? When does it? When does the raising ever end? When does the accommodation for the kids ever end? That's what I want to know.
Yeah,
I don't know. You
never does.
It doesn't now. They just did an article on CNN about the boomerang effect with kids now. They go off to college, but then they move back in with parents.
Whoa.
Yeah.
They might need to get that big car.
You can look. You got a minivan riding around into with grown kids. You know, people, you pull in a place, they be like, they must got an infant in there. No, 23-year-old, a 24-year-old.
They got 30-year-old kids.
Hey, you can do both. You can do both. Get a minivan, you know, and get the convertible. You do both.
It's a convertible. Look, get the convertible. I told my daughter when she left, I said, get a small car because all your friends are going to want to ride. Get a two-seater so all your friends can't ride. And it's the same advice for parents. Get a two-seater so your kids won't come around. They won't ride. Get a two-bedroom condo. I would even upgrade the condo because you ain't even going to be there. Get a two-bedroom condo and say one bedroom is the office and the other bedroom is where we sleep. So where are you going to sleep? There's no place you can sleep in. Make the kids get a hotel when they come visit you.
I like that line of thinking.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Just let them. Coming back home is not an option, so you better be successful when you leave up out of here.
Right. Now, you know, I say that all in joking, and, you know, it's all in fun and everything, but I see that could be potentially a problem, like I said, in the near future. In terms of before it becomes a problem long term, it's going to become a problem in the near term. So we have these conversations every so often, and every time we have it, there's one less laugh in it. So
wow.
I'll take some of the advice that the brothers give, and I'll let you know
And remember, the advice that we're giving you, our wife is not around. So we can say whatever we want on our wife. It may be a different story if our wife was on the phone.
Right. That's why I'm hiding out downstairs.
Yeah.
I was in bed with her for a while.
Yeah. That's be sure to be there. Be that quarterback. Get to the line, and if you see that defense is crazy, call that audible.
Call that audible. Call a timeout.
Right.
Call a timeout.
Good words, fellas. Anybody else got anything for the group? Man, y'all are great. I mean, it's not going through anything. Maybe it's just me and Tony and Rodney. I mean, it's just us.
That's right.
Hey, Rodney, we've been on the phone for 3 hours. We've exhausted a lot tonight.
Yeah.
We've covered a lot.
Yeah.
Right.
Good call, brothers. Good call.
Good call. Does anybody next week's topic? Did we go over that? No.
No, we have.
I guess we'll.
Yeah,
okay, well,
I think
guess
we
we'll
got
work
it.
On
we
that.
Can. We can work on it after this. But
yeah, we'll work on.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Well, fellas, thanks a lot for joining us. This was one of the good ones, one of the great ones, actually. And I think that we all have a clear understanding of what we want out of our roles, what we, you know, what it is, so to speak. And again, the ladies' conference call is Thursday, and they will be talking about this very same. And it'll probably be very interesting, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to talk about what our roles are supposed to be. And then you're probably going to hear a lot of them talking about, well, I'm the head of my house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is taboo. But
you're going to hear
it's definitely going to be interesting. So I'll be checking that out over the weekend just to see exactly what they said. But anyway, again, thank you guys for logging in, and back next Tuesday. Have a blessed rest of the week.
All right, fellas.
Good night.
Be easy. All right.
Okay.
Later.
Okay,
Tony, you still there?
I'm still here.
Oh, you still there, right?
Still here.